All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And yeah, and it's me, Nick DiGilio, and it's Wednesday, which means it's Wildcard Wednesday. You're being Wildcard Wednesday! And you can get your requests in. That's any artist, any song, anything. And make that request now. We'll play it later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after 1:30, our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us. You can hear him doing sports for us at WGN on afternoons with the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And he's going to join us. Lots of sports stuff to talk about. And then we're going to talk about, the ending of that game. That Bears game on Sunday evening is still fresh, and I'm sure that Kevin will have some have something to say about it. And we are going to talk about some other heartbreaking sports moments and heartbreaking sports games. And we'll get into that. And I want to hear from you guys. So we're gonna vent and talk about some of the worst and most tragic and heartbreaking sports situations and games of all time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in for that. And, yeah, we've got other stuff that we're going to talk about. We're going to corporate logos is going to be a topic that we're going to get to at some point tonight. And at all, always, as you know, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. If you can't listen live, and I know many people can't, you can download our podcasts, subscribe to them. It's free. You can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, find the Nick D Show, and subscribe. It's free, and it will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's coming up here on this Wednesday morning. Our phone number again, 312-981-7200. And, yeah, so that's our Wednesday morning. And let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shigrew. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm gonna tell you right now, you know how sometimes I get a little loopy the morning after one of my film club screenings?
Absolutely.
And I think I'm gonna get a little loopy because I did not get any sleep, basically. Yesterday afternoon, normally when I do, I couldn't sleep and I was getting phone calls and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And so I think by around 3:30, I should be clearly out of my mind.
Stay tuned, everybody.
So that, yeah. And by the way, speaking of my film club, I'm wearing, as you can see, Dan, I'm wearing a Charlestown Chiefs jersey.
Very nice.
Number 7, that would be Reggie Dunlap, played by Paul Newman. From the movie Slapshot, we had a really big turnout for Slapshot last night, and a good portion of the crowd had never seen it before, which I was kind of surprised by. But it's just such a great movie. I mean, it's one of those movies, though, Dan, as you know, I know every line of it. I've seen it so many times that
right.
I literally know every line of that movie. And there were a lot of hardcore. There were a lot of hardcore Slapshot fans there. Also, sporting a lot of people came sporting their Charlestown Chiefs jerseys. Many of them. The thing is, the majority of the people who had the Chiefs sweaters, they were wearing Hanson numbers. They were wearing Hanson Brothers numbers, which I understand because they're obviously, you know, the most popular characters in the movie. But I go with. I'd go with Reggie Dunlap. I have to. I got to go with Paul Newman. And there was one other guy in the audience who had a Dunlap. No, I'm sorry, two. Because Matt Cassane was there. The very funny Matt Cassane was there. It's just one of his favorite movies of all time. And he was sporting his Dunlap jersey, too. It was good to see Matt. He's a funny guy, and he's really talented. And it was nice that he came out. And, and he adores the movie. And he told me he's never seen it on the big screen, which was the case for a lot of people because... You know, the movie came out in 1977. That was a long time ago. So there were a lot of young people who had only seen it, you know, either on cable or DVD or if they were even older enough, you know, VHS when it first came out. There were a few people who had seen it in the theater. Not many. A few. But it is incredibly inappropriate in terms of content and language. And, of course, my dad took me to see it when I was 12. So... No, you know what? It came out early in 1977, so I was 11. So it was pre-July, so I was 11 when I saw when I saw Slapshot. And it still holds up. It's just so funny and so profane. And there are some bits in the movie that could not be filmed today. I mean, using really politically incorrect language and and stuff. Where like there's a couple of lines of dialogue where the audience went, oh, like they kind of groaned, like, oh my God. It's 1977, you know. Lots of derogatory remarks that you would find incredibly un-PC and offensive now. But back in 77, that kind of stuff just slid. But it was great, and we had a great turnout, and we had a fantastic turnout at Murray Brothers Caddyshack before the movie. Great food, and they had the $2 tall boy Schlitz. They were flying. So 15% off all of our food for the film club members, and we're doing it again next month at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack. We've got a partnership with these guys now for sure. Next month, I'm hosting a screening of my mom's favorite movie. I kind of programmed this one for my mom specifically. It's Barefoot in the Park with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda. See, I do a Paul Newman movie this month, Robert Redford movie next month. See how that works?
Very nice.
February 5th is when we'll do Barefoot in the Park, Neil Simon movie. I think one of the funniest movies of all time and really sweet. And just in time for Valentine's Day. And the Murray Brothers Caddyshack guys are going to put together a couple of drink specials and some dessert specials that are very romantic, just in time for Valentine's Day. So I hope you guys can all make it out. And I want to thank everybody for coming out to see Slapshot last night, because it was a blast. And we had a really, really, I couldn't have been happier with the turnout and the reaction. People were falling off the chairs laughing. So anyway, so that was so that's why I'm going to be, I might be a little loopy a little later on, Dan. I just want to warn you ahead of time. You may have to just take over the show. So let's go into the newsroom, and it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. What time do you think you'll be getting loopy? I'll try to write some loopy news for you.
Yeah.
We'll kick that in.
I think it might. I'm a little out of it now. I mean, I gotta be quite honest with you, because I really didn't get much sleep at all. And my folks and I went out to the theater. Well, we went to the Caddyshack. 5:30 is when I left my apartment. 5:30 in the evening.
Oh, that's a long one. Yeah,
and I won't be back till by 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So
you know, on nights like this, we should have me and Dan should go in there early and kind of turn back the clocks a little, just to
fool me.
Right.
Oh, I see. So it's a little psychological thing.
Yes.
So I don't get nuts sooner.
Yeah, that's a long day, man. That's a long day.
Yeah.
I was thinking that it would drive you further nuts, because you'd start, you'd start noticing the digital clocks are different from the manual clocks, and you're like, is it just me, or is just time playing a trick on me?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
What about those little ammonia sticks? We can go in on the break and give you a couple snorts of that.
Yeah, that will do it. And again, and the thing is, you know, as I think you know, Vic, I don't do caffeine.
Right.
So it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, I'm already, you know, I'm shaky and crazy enough. You know, I don't need to add caffeine to the mix.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm already hyper, I talk too fast, and I shake all the time, so I don't really need to add caffeine to the mix. So I will do these time stretches without caffeine, and it gets a little bit crazy. But we're going to have a fun show. Sometimes when I get looped up, the show turns out to be pretty weird and funny. So maybe that'll happen this morning. I don't know.
Yep.
Kevin Powell's going to be with us. He's weird. So he's gonna be joining us, and we are gonna. Hey, and Vic, I know you're obviously a sports fan and a big football fan.
Yep.
Think about
and a KP fan, so I'll be listening.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Good old KP. He'll be here, and he will be introduced, of course, with Bill Withers, because that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. But I also want you to think about after we talk to KP, after the 2 o'clock news, we are going to talk about heartbreaking sports memories. So think about that, Vic. Because I know we all have them.
Yeah,
we all have them. I don't know if Bears fans could top what happened on Sunday, though. I mean, seriously, Dan, don't you think that's like way up near the top of heartbreaking games of all time?
Yeah, I mean, considering the circumstances and that he made the kick before and the double doink. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, I know we'll lead with that when Kevin gets here. And I'm sure he's got a lot to say. He's a huge, huge Bears fan. So think about it, folks. Think about like the heartbreaking sports games and moments that devastated you as a sports fan. And then maybe we'll throw in the moments that were great. You know, just to get us in a good mood. Talk about some of the happiest and greatest sports moments as a fan that you can remember. So we'll go from the extremes, the worst to the best, heartbreaking to the most glorious. So that's all coming up on the show. Take a quick break. When we come back, I got a few food items that we're going to talk about here and to get the show kicked off. And we'll do that right after we take a break. Again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk and text and get your Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Kevin Powell is going to join us after the 1:30 news to talk sports. We're going to lead with the heartbreaking Bears loss from Sunday, and then we're going to talk about, in general, some of the biggest heartbreaking moments in sports and the end of games that hurt you if you're a big fan. We'll get into that, some of the more devastating ones, and then we'll do some of the ones that were great and surprising and great. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and your Wild Card Wednesday requests, which we'll begin in a little bit. So a couple of older food stories, Dan. Now, you know that the best fast casual restaurant in the U.S. Was voted on by TripAdvisor. And our own Portillo's was dubbed the best fast casual restaurant based on quantity and quality of reviews in the last 12 months. At TripAdvisor, which I think is a great choice, Portillo's, they're opening. You know, we're actually my folks and I are going to see a movie on Saturday, and we're going to the Norridge, so that might be a pretty good excuse to go to Portillo's.
Yeah,
to go to Portillo's.
That's that location's pretty close to my folks and our place as well.
Yeah,
and in the 8-10 months that it's been open, I mean, we're there at least once a month now.
Yeah. I think we'll do that. I think we'll make a trip to Portillo's, and you know, because there's some good stuff over there on Harlem now. Like, yeah. Some really, you know, you got Culver's is right there next to the Norridge,
you got the Raising Cane.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My dad loves that place. But in honor of this award, I think we'll stop over before the movie, or maybe after the movie, we'll stop over and get some Portillo's. And it's great. I mean, you know, and it's consistent. Every location is great. And I've been to 3-4 different Portillo's. Obviously, the one down here is the one that I've most frequented. The one in River North is the one I've most frequented. But here's what they say: a Chicago chain has been named the best fast casual restaurant in Chicago, according to TripAdvisor. The travel company released its 2018 Traveler's Choice Awards, recognizing 75 restaurants in the U.S. in categories like fine dining, everyday dining, and fast casual dining. What does everyday dining mean? What's the difference between that and fast casual?
I always imagine fast casual is more of places that you sit down. You know, it, like the Chipotle, the Portillo's, where
it, oh, okay.
you can, you know.
You grab, like, your food, and it's like sort of high-end burgers,
right,
and stuff,
right,
like that.
So if McDonald's, I'd say, is 60% drive-through, 40% dine-in, mm-hmm. I'd say a Portillo's is maybe more 60% sit-in, 40% drive-in.
Yeah. And then everyday dining would be what, something like TGIF Fridays, that,
yeah,
kind of thing, Olive Garden? That,
I would guess, yeah, something, yeah, that where there is no drive-through.
Okay. By the way, the drive-through at the Portillo's down here is so efficiently run, it's staggering. They got people outside taking your order. There's two lines of the cars that go in. And how they don't tie up a ton of traffic, because that is a high-volume area where that Portillo's is. You know what I mean? But they know how to work that. You get through that drive-through, and they're very, you know, very seldom is there any sort of problem, you know? Portillo's was dubbed the best fast casual restaurant based on the quantity and quality of reviews in the last 12 months. We are honored to receive this award, Portillo's CEO Michael Osanlo said in a statement. It's a true testament to our hardworking restaurant team members and our passionate fans. We are thrilled. Portillo's truly cuts the mustard. Oh, I see what he did there. I see. TripAdvisor said it defined fast casual as restaurants that offer high-quality meals at a great value to diners on the go. Other restaurants to make up the top 10 in the category include Earl of Sandwich. We don't have Earl of Sandwich here.
There was one in Florida. We were going to try it. It's all hot sandwiches.
Oh, okay. Shake Shack. We've got Shake Shack here. Shake Shack's good. Blaze Pizza. I don't know Blaze Pizza.
So that's part of a new trend where it's kind of fast pizzas that you order like you're at a Subway.
Oh, really?
So they bring out the dough and you tell them, all right, I want this type of sauce and I want these ingredients and things like that. So you go down the line and, you know, it's like the Neapolitan pizza where it's very thin. So they can just throw it in the oven and it's done within 10, 15 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
The other one is called Mod Pizza. It's the same.
Same concept.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were going to tell me it was the Kramer's old concept where you make your own pizza. You roll out the dough and you shove it in the oven. In-N-Out Burger. We have the In-N-Out Burger. No, we don't have an In-N-Out Burger here. I like In-N-Out Burger. It's a West Coast thing. The Taco Stand. That's a pretty original name. Five Guys, which is, I enjoy Five Guys. Super Duper Burgers. Tacos El Gordo. And Torchy's Tacos. Torchy's Tacos. Other Chicago restaurants listed in the Traveler's Choice were the Purple Pig, which was named 15th best everyday dining. Oh, wait a minute. The Purple Pig is everyday dining? Okay. Alania was named 19th best for fine dining, and Bavette's Bar was listed as the 25th top dining restaurant. So Purple Pig is considered everyday dining, huh?
Well, if it's the definition you're talking about where you have, it's not drive through, it's sit in.
Yeah. Okay, because I thought Purple Pig was a close to fine dining. But it is, no, you know, it's a lot more casual than Alinea for sure. I mean, that's like, that's as fancy as it gets. So, well, it's an interesting group of places. I love the Taco Stand. That is, hey, let's go to the Taco Stand. Which one? The Taco Stand. No, I understand, but which Taco Stand? The Taco Stand. Dan, have you ever had In-N-Out Burger?
I have not.
They're really good. They're really good. There is a reason why when many people I know go out to California, the first thing they do is they go to In-N-Out Burger. There's a reason for that. There's a reason why people are obsessed. The burgers are great. They're really, really great. And that's where after the dude's landlord's recital, dance recital, they go to the In-N-Out they go to the In-N-Out Burger in Lebowski. So, all right, Portillo's. Now, as I've said before, anytime I mention Portillo's, I do have to mention the chili dog. The chili dog is the best chili dog that I've ever had consistently. And again, I've had a chili dog at different Portillo's, and it's consistently great. I don't know how they do it, but they get some cheese and some chili and some onions, and they. You know, everybody knows what a chili dog is, but this is like chili cheese dog, okay? And it's just the onions are the only other condiment that you put on it. And I seriously don't know how they do it, but every single time I get a chili dog from Portillo's, it is the exact right scientific amount of chili topping to put on a hot dog. There's not too little of it. There's not so much that it soaks all over the bun and falls off and you have to use a spoon. I don't know how they do it. But, like, you pick it up, you eat it, very rarely maybe a bean will fall off, and that's it. But I've had chili dogs where they just pour the chili all over the hot dog, and then you pick it up, and you're like, well, I can't eat this. I'll have to get a spoon, eat some of the chili off the top of the hot dog, and then I can pick it up and eat it. That's not the case with Portillo's. It's the best chili dog. It's the best chili dog in the world. I've never had a bit, and I love chili dogs. I enjoy a good chili dog. Nobody makes a better chili dog than Portillo's. So, and of course, everything else there is good. You know, everybody loves the chocolate cake. The beef, the Italian beef there is good. The regular Chicago-style dog is good. So.
Shakes.
Oh, yeah, the shakes. Yeah. So there it is. TripAdvisor chooses Portillo's. And again, a good choice. All right. Now I got a taste for a chili dog from Portillo's specifically. Portillo's isn't open late, are they?
No, they don't.
They close at like 9 or something, 11, or 10, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, okay. All right, well, I'll just, you know, as I go loopier, as the show goes along. I did have chicken and waffles at Murray Brothers Caddyshack, and it was very good, with a spicy maple syrup. Really tasty. So, all right, all right, we'll take a break. And you know who Kevin Powell is, Dan? You where?
I've met him once.
You know, he does sports here on Ro Khan's show, and we're going to talk with him about sports after the news, which is next.
Just one look at you. And I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here in downtown, lovely downtown Chicago, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. It's Wednesday. That means it's Wild Card Wednesday, so you can get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, and we'll play those later. We're also going to talk about the most famous company logos, most distinctive company logos of all time that stay with you. Maybe the most clever or the weirdest, and a lot more coming up on the show. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. All right, let's get to it. Now, you know that when you hear Bill Withers, it can mean only one thing. Kevin Powell, our good buddy Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell does sports for us here afternoons on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here at WGN Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. And we have him on every once in a while to talk sports. So let's bring Kevin in. Hey, Kevin.
Nick, Happy New Year. That put a smile on my face. I'm wearing black all week because I'm mourning after that one of the most devastating losses of my life.
We're going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
Happy New Year, though. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you. That we have to cover that, obviously. So you saw the family over the holidays. You went back to Georgia.
I did, yeah. My brother lives down there. My sister-in-law, his wife, is from that area. They moved down there a few years ago and got to meet my... they got a third one now, so a little Vera, got to meet her, so it was a nice little trip, a little Christmas in Georgia for a few days. It was good to see the whole gang down there.
What kind of weather did you have down there? Is it weird to go someplace with that kind of climate for Christmas?
You know, it was nice. We weren't there for like we were there like a week before Christmas, so it was nice to kind of get away. But you know what? I think it was a weird week in Chicago where it was only a few degrees difference. It wasn't that big of a difference, but it was nice to get away for a few days and see the fam down there.
All right. Well, welcome back and Happy New Year and all that good stuff.
Yeah, Happy New Year, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. So sports on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis every day. And you do a podcast and a blog that you do, correct, Kevin?
Yeah, and that's going to be picking up big time soon because there's a lot of rumors swirling in the baseball world. Football is over now, so it's kind of looking ahead. I know we got Blackhawks and Bulls, but we're about 5 weeks or so away from pitchers and catchers reporting. So, yeah, that's the podcast and blog is going to start ramping up big time now.
Okay, cool. All right, let's talk Bears. I know that it's not going to be easy to talk about it, but so let's. You were at the game on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. I was, Nick, and when that happened, when the double doink happened, I was, the members of the media normally leave the press box to get downstairs. You got to walk kind of around the tunnel underneath to get to the locker room, and everybody tries to get in line, you know, yeah. 'Cause especially a game like that, there's like a million members of the media, so
yeah.
I got down to the tunnel and just started sprinting because it's not a short walk to the interview room where they have a TV for us so we can watch the end of the game. So I'm sprinting, got my steps in for the day, you know.
Yeah.
And I got there and he makes that kick and you're like, okay. And the second one, you're just like, I don't think he's going to miss it. And then it's in just unbelievable fashion. Nick, you're the movie guy. You can't even make this stuff up in Hollywood.
No.
He hits the post again. 6 times he's hit the post this year. 11 missed kicks this year. You just can't make it up. It was heartbreaking. It was devastating. It was one of the worst losses of my entire life.
I have to say, you know, Kevin, I'm not the biggest football fan in the world, but I was I was indeed watching the game. I didn't watch the whole game. I watched like the just about the last quarter of it, and and when that happened, I just could not believe it. I felt horrible for every Bears fan on the planet, and I felt horrible for all of my friends who are hardcore Bears fans. And you're right, Kevin. You're right. You can't make that up. I mean, you can't make that up.
You almost hate to dwell on it. I get it. I mean, it's been a few days now, but it's just one of those losses. And look, we've had them in town here. It just stings because for a lot of reasons. I mean, one, obviously you make the cake, you're moving on. But two, it was such a special season for this team. It was so fun watching this team. It was so fun covering this team. It was so fun getting to know the players on this team. It was such a magical season, especially after 6, 7, 8 years of darkness for Chicago Bears football, where it was just bad and horrible, horrible play.
Yeah.
It finally turned the corner, and you're like, okay, they got a shot at making a run at the Super Bowl. They really did. I don't think that was blind Bears optimism. I think that was real.
Yeah.
But the Bears, look, I think if they beat the Eagles, they still got a really good shot at going to the Super Bowl, and it just came down to one kick.
And I mean, it couldn't have been more dramatic, and it couldn't have been more, really seriously, more horrible the way that game ended. Now, now, since though, it has been ruled that it was blocked. Does that change people's reactions? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, I said this before, like, we can't be idiots about Cody Parkey, right? I mean, this town has ruined one man's life already over a sporting event. Like, let's not do it again. I feel bad for Cody Parkey. I know some people right now are shaking their heads like, I don't feel bad for Cody Parkey. The ball, yes, officially ruled a block. The ball appeared to be tipped. I don't know how much it changed the trajectory of the ball.
Yeah.
Look, you just got to find a way to make that kick. You got to find a way to make that kick, period. End of story, you do.
Yeah.
And it stings. And I don't think the block ruling changes anybody's feelings on the game. If it takes away some of the angst you have on Cody Parkey, good. I mean, look, here's the thing with Cody Parkey. It's like, I feel bad for him. I really do.
Yeah.
The guy was devastated. He faced the music. I was one of the 4,000 media members sticking a microphone in his face after the game. And, he faced the music, and he manned up, and he did what he had to do, and he talked. But let's not let the sympathy and the pity that we have for Cody Parkey overshadow what he did all year.
Right.
He was really, really bad all season, Nick. And all season long, we kept kind of joking, like, Parkey's going to totally,
yeah,
for lack of a better word, he's going to screw the season, Nick.
Yeah.
And we were kind of joking about it.
And then
it happened.
And then it happened. Yeah, and then it happened. Let me ask you about your thoughts on the Eagles coach calling that timeout the way he did.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, you see that all the time. You see it icing in the NFL all the time. They're going to use all the timeouts they have, especially when you know what Parkey's been through this year, when it's obviously been a mental thing, because he can make kicks, but it's clearly a mental thing with Parkey. So, yeah, Doug Peterson made the right call. Call a timeout and let Parkey think about it. Let your team kind of think about it. And yeah, the Eagles made a play. They tipped it, but it's
funny because the timing of that timeout was I have to say, it was pretty crazy. It was pretty exquisite, actually, the way he called that timeout. He made the first kick, although.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, you know, like, and then this, and you, I, when I was watching the game and they called that timeout and he made the kick, I was like, man, I don't think he's going to make, you know, because that's, you know, when that timeout was called, that clearly, and you said he's, you know, it's all in, a lot of it's in his head. And the way that that timeout was called and the timing of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, no, this is not good. This is not good.
Right. No, I had that sinking feeling as well. We've heard sort of different messages from former kickers and analysts and things like that about the, you know, the quote, icing a kicker by using timeouts.
Yeah.
Some kickers like it because it gives you an opportunity to get a practice kick in. Parkey got a practice kick in.
Yeah.
But yeah. When you've had the season like Parkey, you got to figure that's got to mess with you mentally a little bit.
Yeah. Of course. All right. Now you said that you had a mic in his face. Tell me what the locker room was like after that game.
Well, I'll say this, and I posted this on Twitter that, you know, at the time when I posted it, I realized it wasn't going to make anybody feel much better after that brutal, excruciating loss. But just know this, that locker room is so united. And they all had the exact same message. They all felt so bad for Parkey. They all had encouraging words for Parkey. I think one of the things that made this season special is knowing that the core isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
This wasn't a fluke season. I mean, I realized they were lucky. They were fortunate in the health department. There were some injuries here and there. Eddie Jackson didn't play. Mitch Trubisky missed a couple of games. Khalil Mack missed a couple of games. But for the most part, they were pretty fortunate on the health front. And they had 36 takeaways, the most in the NFL. That's probably not going to happen again. Yes, that happened. That's why it was such a special season. But just about basically the entire core is coming back. I mean, defensively, the only free agents to be have are Bryce Callahan and Adrian Amos. You got to figure at least one of those guys is coming back. So you basically have an entire defense coming back next year. That was the best defense in the NFL. And then you have Mitch Trubisky entering his second season in his third season in the NFL, second season in a new system under Matt Nagy. So there's a lot of optimism, and Khalil Mack called it a stepping stone. Danny Trevathan completely agreed. So I think, look, I don't think anybody's over this loss yet. I'm not over this loss yet,
yeah.
But there's definite reason to be excited about Chicago. Danny Trevathan said this. He goes, Chicago Bear football, the standard is higher now, period. And I agree with them. It's the Bears aren't going away. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, what do you think about next season, 2019-2020?
Yeah, I think they should be right there in the thick of things. I would be stunned if they don't make the playoffs next year. And as long as if they stay healthy next year, they got a real good shot at making another run at things. I really believe that.
Okay. And now defensive coordinator Vic is actually he's lining up for head coaching jobs. So we're going to lose him.
Yeah, well, everybody's kind of crossing their fingers that he doesn't go to Denver. He's one of two finalists right now, so it's sort of a 50-50 thing. The players love Vic Fangio. They love Vic Fangio. He's the architect of that defense. When he came to Chicago, it was the 30th ranked defense in the NFL. And based off whatever metrics you want to look at, I would say this is the best defense in the NFL right now. So you don't want to lose him. I think that would be pretty significant if he leaves. But, yeah, he had dinner with John Elway a couple nights ago, and you just kind of hope that he doesn't leave. But he's one of two finalists. It's not a done deal yet. There's a good shot he comes back. And even if they do offer him the head coaching job, who knows? Maybe the Bears offer him everything.
Yeah.
Just, you know, to double his contract, do whatever it takes, because he means a lot to this team.
Yeah. And even though the season ended on such a horrendous, horrible note, nobody expected this season
right.
to happen. So if you want to look at it half full, you know, nobody thought they would be 12-4 and get to the and get to the playoffs and possibly and possibly go to the Super Bowl. Nobody thought that at the beginning of the season. So in retrospect, when you look back, it was a pretty great season.
Oh, it was a phenomenal season. I mean, that was some of the most fun I've ever had watching football. And Nick, you know I'm a football junkie.
Yeah, yeah.
But it made me love football even more. I just couldn't consume enough football this year. It's sort of, so the depression is setting in here with football kind of coming to an end. Especially,
yeah.
I mean, I know people are laughing, but I'm serious. Like, this is my life. I'm a total sports dork. I get it, but it just it was such an amazing season. It was so fun. I couldn't wait. Every game felt like there was a month between every game. I just could not wait for another Chicago Bears football game. But
yeah.
Look, it was a great year. I kind of had them pegged at about a 500 team. And then when you made that Khalil Mack trade, it changed everything. It gave them a ton of momentum. So,
yeah.
Like I said, you know, I'll put a positive spin on it. They're not going anywhere. The core is coming back. You got Khalil Mack. You got Eddie Jackson, Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks, Mitch Trubisky, Allen Robinson. The core is still here.
Okay. All right. Kevin, hang out, okay, buddy?
You got it.
All right. Kevin Powell is with us. He does sports on afternoons here on WGN Radio on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. You can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. KPowell720. More sports talk with Kevin after this on 720 WGN.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks. Take the attack, yeah, and we'll back you, Blackhawks. You're flying high now, so let's wrap it up. Let's go, you Hawks. Move on. Now all the gods. Here come the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks. Here comes the Hawks.
Welcome back, everybody. Yeah. That's, I think, the best sports theme of all time. And that is my beloved Blackhawks, who are having a rough go of it this season. And we're going to talk about that in a couple of seconds. And we are live in the Allstate Skylight Studio here till 5 o'clock. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, we're talking sports here with Kevin Powell, who you can hear do sports on the afternoon show here, the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. And you can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. And let's get Kevin back in here. Hey, Kevin.
Nick, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So last night, I screened Slapshot at the AMC Rosemont 18. Had a really big crowd, and and a lot of people had never seen it before, which I was surprised by. But a lot of people had never seen it before. But then, of course, there were the hardcore fans. I came straight from there, and mm-hmm. I am currently wearing my Charlestown Chiefs number 7 jersey, which is the number that Reggie Dunlap, played by the great Paul Newman, wears in the movie. So, and
one of my favorite scenes of that movie, and I haven't seen it in a while, but remember with me. Unpacked their suitcases,
oh, yeah.
And it's just like little car figures.
Yeah, oh yeah, 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 yeah. There's one. It inspires one of my favorite lines in the movie. I have to censor it a little bit because there's a lot of language in that movie.
Yeah.
It inspires one of my favorite lines when he's complaining to the GM played by Strother Martin, Paul Newman. He had to pick these idiots up at the bus station and take them to the hotel. But he's like, they brought their friggin' toys with them, which is my favorite. So we had a great crowd last night to watch that movie, and it's a confirmation that it is without question the best hockey movie ever made, and it's so fun to watch it now, Kevin, because to see how much the game has changed just in terms of, like, you know, protective gear. There's a lot of guys in the movie. Most of the guys in the movie don't wear helmets. This movie was in 1977. The goalies are really clearly not nearly as padded as they are. Their helmets don't cover their whole face, and there's no advertising on the boards. None of that stuff. And it's just interesting to watch that. Knowing how hockey has changed since 1977.
I know, the first time I saw it, I was like, "Where are their helmets?"
Yeah, I know.
Where are their helmets at?
Yeah, that's how they
classic.
Used to.
That inspires me. I need to watch. I wish I would have made it. I got to watch that movie soon.
Oh yeah, no, it was great to see it on the big screen. We had a digitally remastered restoration of it, and it looked great. And it's so great to see that movie. If you ever have the opportunity to see that movie with a crowd, it's really something, because I mean that movie is so funny and so exciting and so weird and hilarious that we had a great time. Now let's get into the real hockey. There was a stretch there a few weeks ago where the Hawks were looking great, and then they put together a little run there, and then and lately it's kind of fallen apart again. So where are you at on this?
Well, I mean, coming off our Bears conversation, I'm just grasping for. I'm looking around every single corner, Nick, looking for hope to get me to baseball season.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, somebody do something.
Yeah.
Look, they're 6 points out of the wild card. It's not over yet.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of hockey to be played here, and obviously Corey Crawford being out hasn't helped. Kyle Delia, though.
Yeah.
How about him stepping up huge?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Last start, he had a .952 save percentage. He was 3-0-1. That's huge for them. If he can keep that up, and even against the Flames, he played pretty well. I know they lost that game, but
yeah,
he played pretty well. So, look, man, I'm not counting them out. I realize they're not playing at the standard we've been so used to for the past decade, but there's reason to watch the Blackhawks, and I think we need to start talking about Patrick Kane on a different level. Not that he hasn't been getting love for so many years.
Yeah.
I think we all understand how great he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about a different level.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. The quality of what he's playing at right now is eye-opening. I mean, he's still probably a top 10 player in the NHL. And yeah. I don't think that's a stretch, Nick. I mean, the goal he had the other night, where he beat two defenders and backhands it into the back.
It was sick.
That's unworldly stuff.
No, it is.
So, you know, to see, look, you're still seeing some legends of Blackhawks hockey, some legends of hockey, period, still playing at a pretty high. And Taze is having a good year. You know, I'm giving you some optimism here. I'm not down on the Hawks yet. They still got a shot. I think they're going to, if they really want to seriously make a run, they need one of those special, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 game winning streaks. I'm not talking about point streaks. I'm talking about winning streaks.
Right.
To really get back in the thick of things, but they're not dead yet, Nick.
No, I know. I know they're playing tonight. And you know what? As disappointing as this season has been for us Hawks fans and for me, I watch or listen to every game. I mean, that doesn't stop. I watch or I listen to every single game.
We're doing the show at the UC tonight, and I just can't. When I find out we have a broadcast at the United, I get so excited. Yeah. It's such a fun time. Period. And the story.
Yep.
I don't care how well or how bad they're playing. It is such. I just love it. I don't know. It's just the Blackhawks always seem to get me through the winter.
Oh yeah, no question about it. All right, now let's end on a high note here. The Cats had a big comeback win on New Year's Eve, Northwestern. Let's talk a little bit about that. That must have been fun.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun. They were down early, came back, and I guess that's just a Pat Fitzgerald team for you. They just continue to fight, and Clayton Thorson goes out with the victory. He's got all sorts of records and everything at Northwestern. So, end on a high note. It was great to see the Cats finish like that, and I know Dave Vennett was happy about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. A come from behind win, and also you know, everybody was panicking a little bit that Pat Fitzgerald might take a job with the Green Bay Packers, but that didn't happen.
Well, as Fitz would say, go Cats. I think, you know, I'm just hoping he's a Cat for life, and I know how much he loves it there in Evanston. And yeah, I got a little uneasy, Nick, when I saw that rumor popping up. But doesn't sound like he's leaving Northwestern anytime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, by the way, you went to Lou Canelli's new restaurant.
Yes, awesome spot up in Lincoln Park, kind of snuggled into one of those. You know, tight little areas in Lincoln Park. Avli Taverna, I hope I said that correctly. That's a great spot. Lou's a great guy, and pops in the studio and talks Bears with us every now and again. He invited us to his new restaurant. Great spot. We had a lot of fun there.
Yeah, Lou's a good guy. I was on Fox with him a few years ago when my play Black and Blue was running, and they had me in, and we talked about it. And he's a very cool guy. And I like watching.
He's a good guy. Check it out. Good spot. It was fun.
All right. Very cool. All right. Kevin, everybody can follow you on kpowell720. And you're going to get your blog and your podcast up and running, get going. And people can listen to you every weekday afternoon on the Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantes right here on GN.
Thank you so much, Nick. Happy New Year. Really
all right,
appreciate
buddy.
It.
Happy New Year to you. You're the best, Kev. Take care, buddy.
All right, my man. See you soon. Bye.
See ya. Kevin Powell, everybody. Always fun to talk to. Always fun to talk sports with Kevin. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Wildcard Wednesday has begun. You've been Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. John in Logansport, Indiana, chose Sweet Georgia Brown, the Globetrotters theme, and they're playing in Indiana later this month. I think they were just in Chicago.
Yeah, they usually hit around the holidays.
Yeah, I think they were just in Chicago, or they're in Chicago very, very soon. Something around that, because I saw a commercial for it for the Harlem Globetrotters. I'm assuming they still do the same stuff, you know. Uh-oh, that bucket's full of water. No, it's not. It's full of confetti. That's one of my favorite Harlem Globetrotters bits. It's not water. It's confetti. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So are people allowed to be very upset and cry about the Washington Generals? Is that the episode of The Simpsons where Krusty bet on the I thought the Generals were due. So we just talked about this heartbreaking loss that the Bears suffered this past weekend. And in addition to talking about some of the worst, most heartbreaking moments, we're also going to talk about moments where it's okay. Basically, we're going to be talking about moments where it's okay to cry. Sports moments where it's okay to cry. And that means happy moments, too. So we're talking about the great moments and the bad moments. And we want to hear from you. Because, you know, on Monday morning, Dan, when we were doing the show, you know, at 4 o'clock, the WGN morning news comes on, the TV morning news. And I have it on two monitors in the studio here every morning. And they just kept showing people, you know, like Bears fans' reactions as they watched it in a couple of different bars. Oh, man, it was terrible. It was terrible. So, yeah, so this is the kind of thing we're talking about. We're talking about the sports things where it's okay to cry. And it's on both sides, not necessarily. I mean, we're talking about heartbreaking moments, moments that were just, like, devastating. But moments that were also, like, either heartwarming or beautiful or exciting, and it was okay to cry. So we've got the 2001 World Series Paul O'Neill chants. This is a good one. During the 2001 World Series, which was expected to be O'Neill's last season in pinstripes, Yankees Universe wanted to give him a special parting gift, and boy, was it special. During the latter portions of Game 5 of the series, every mouth screamed the same two words like a chorus in harmony, Paul O'Neill, Paul O'Neill, Paul O'Neill. Gave you goosebumps just to watch it. It's extremely rare that you see Yankees fans get like that, and the way they got behind O'Neill that night was more than touching. Yeah. They didn't win that World Series, though. Who did they play that year? Am I nuts? Was it... I can't remember who they played that year. And it was one of those deals where... I didn't root for the Yankees. I rooted for whoever the other team was in the 2001 World Series. But everybody, you know, I remember people were mad at me because I was not rooting for the Yankees because of what happened September 11th. Everybody was like, "You got to root for the Yankees," and I'm like, "No, I'm not gonna root for the Yankees."
That was the Diamondbacks series.
It was the Diamondbacks. Okay. Josh Hamilton in the 2008 Home Run Derby is okay to cry at. Josh Hamilton's story of redemption may be the best in history of sports. Just hearing the tale sends chills down your spine. However, back in 2008, nobody knew whether Josh Hamilton was here to stay. That changed in 2008 Home Run Derby. Hamilton launched 28 shots over Yankee Stadium in the competition's first round and got by far the greatest ovation ever received by a Yankee stadium visitor. The moment made you feel so good that anyone would shed a tear of joy just watching it live. There's a lot of emotional stuff on in this article from Bleacher Report, by the way. This is where it came from. I have to say one of my favorite sports moments ever was the series against Nashville in 2010, Game 5. Blackhawks, I should say. I should clarify. Dan, did you watch that game?
I did.
I'm telling you, I lost my mind, and we could have gone to that game. There was a conflict that my ex-wife Heather and I could have gone to the game, but we ended up not going. But we watched it at home, and the series was tied at two at this point. And it was a back and forth game throughout the game, and then with a minute left, Marian Hossa checked, I can't remember who, into the boards, but it was a pretty big and a pretty cheap hit, which is very unusual for Marian Hossa. He doesn't do that kind of stuff, and he doesn't normally play that kind of game. Also, he doesn't take dumb penalties. He was not one of those guys that took dumb penalties. With, you know, this is a crucial game. You know, they would if they had lost that game. You know, if they lose the game, they have to go to a game six, which they must win, and in Nashville. So, This was insane. For people who don't remember, this is seriously my you know, look, when the Hawks won the cup in 2010, that was an insane moment. And of course in 2013 and 2015 when they won the cup, those were three of my favorite sports games moments ever that made me go nuts. But I got to say Game 5 Nashville 2010, it might take the cake. Seriously. I mean, they didn't win the cup, obviously. It was only the first round of the playoffs, too. So here's what happened. There's a minute left in the game. The Hawks are down one. Okay? And Hossa does this cheap hit, gets a five-minute major, okay? Does not get a game misconduct, which is very important to the outcome of this game. If you would have got a game misconduct, that's you get booted. You're out of the game. But he's got to spend 5 minutes in the penalty box. Okay. The minute left in the game, they throw him in the penalty box. So he's in the box. Hawks are shorthanded now. With 14 seconds left, Kaner, sick goal, scores it, ties the game. Okay? With 14 seconds left, UC goes nuts. People are going nuts. All right, so now we're going to overtime. And they do a full timeout in the playoffs, you know, when you're in the playoffs in the NHL, you do a full timeout. Full intermission between, you know, your third and your third period and your overtime period. So during this intermission, my ex-wife and I are just like, "Oh my God," cuz now when they come back in the intermission or when they come back in the overtime, they still got 4 minutes to kill on Hossa's penalty. So they're going to be shorthanded for 4 minutes with Hossa in the box. So we come back, and you know they come back from the intermission, which took forever because we were just so everybody was so anxious. So they get it. The overtime starts. They got 4 minutes to kill, and it's the longest 4 minutes of my life. It was insane. And I'm not making this up. With about a minute left on Hossa's penalty, I said to Heather, "Hey, don't worry about it." And I was goofing around, obviously. I said, "Don't worry about it. When Hossa gets out of the box, he'll score the game-winning goal." And that's what happened. And so Hossa gets out of the box. They successfully kill off the four-minute penalty, which was unbelievable. I mean, nerve-wracking. I was not sitting down. I was pacing around the apartment. And then when Hossa gets out of the box, he does. He gets the puck, scores the game-winning goal. Place goes absolutely berserk. I'm going nuts in the apartment. And that remains maybe my favorite Hawk moment. You know, besides them, I mean, obviously them winning the cup is more important in terms of, you know, the stature of it. But that's it was absolutely incredible. And again, it's one of those moments that you couldn't write. You know, you just couldn't do it. Now, Dan, do you have one of your favorite moments like that?
The Eddie of the championships for the stature. But I remember the feeling of elation when Devin Hester ran back the opening kickoff in the Super Bowl loss.
2011? No. 2007.
Yeah.
2007. Yeah.
So when he did that, you know, just we were all amped up to begin with, and the fact they kicked to him and he did that and everything he had done that season, it was just like, this could happen, you know?
Yeah.
We were underdogs in the game. And so it was one of those things where, it was just kind of like, oh my God, you know, like they kicked to him. He did this, you know? And,
we were at my parents' house. Mm. Heather and I were at my parents' house watching the game, and that was incredible. It really was. And the game didn't turn out
right.
But that moment,
definitely, I just remember just being gobsmacked and jaw on the floor.
Yeah. I can't believe neither of us, I can't believe I didn't mention this. You know, the Cubs won the World Series about 2.5 years ago.
Sure.
And that, I mean, what can you say about that?
A lot of tears of joy that day for a lot of people.
Yeah. Seriously, that was just ridiculous. Everybody cried. I cried. I call up my parents. My parents are crying. Everybody was just bawling, and it was incredible. One of the greatest sports moments ever in the history of sports, and especially this town. I mean, it might be the greatest sports moment in the history of this town.
Sure. What the weight attached to it.
Yeah. so that was there. And the game they won the previous Saturday, or no, I'm sorry, the game that they won to get into the World Series. That was the same night. I'll never forget it. It was a Saturday night. They win the game and they're going to the World Series. And for some reason, that hit me a little bit. That almost hit me harder. You know, than when they won the World Series, it was just insane. But the fact that they were going to go to the World Series, for some reason, I don't know why, that really struck me. But it was a Saturday night, and I watched the game. Obviously, watched all the post game coverage and all that stuff, and that was the night that David S. Pumpkins came into our world. Tom Hanks was hosting SNL. It was the Halloween episode, and David S. Pumpkins was brought into the world. So that was a great night. Cubs went into the World Series, and David S. Pumpkins became part of our lives. But yeah, so those were good ones, obviously. And I mean, you know, clearly the World Series, and it erased all of the sad stuff that happened. And we can talk sad stuff if we're going to talk. You know, and we are talking sad sports things, or sports things that make you cry. You know, the number of Cubs related moments that made you cry or were really devastating are endless. Just endless, which is why there was so much elation when the Cubs won the World Series.
Right.
I mean, I'm speaking in obvious, but all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going on either end of the spectrum, and in generic stuff, like emotional stuff, like it's okay to cry at these sports moments. 312-981-7200. Which ones would you talk about? We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I love this girl. I love Haley Steinfeld. I think she's wonderful. This is a Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? That would be any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And that's Haley Steinfeld. Ike in Country Club Hills requested that. And that's Back to Life. And that's from Bumblebee. That's her song that's on the Bumblebee soundtrack. She performed it on Mr. Jimmy Fallon's show. And I didn't know that. I mean, I know she's in the Pitch Perfect movies, and I know she can sing. I wasn't aware that she was going to release albums and stuff, but she is. I just think she's great. I mean, because I loved her since True Grit. You know, when she played the little girl in True Grit, she was great in that. But it's the movie The Edge of 17. Edge of 17 is, I mean, I love her in that movie. I haven't seen Bumblebee. It was during the Christmas break, and I didn't go. I'm not high on the Transformer movies, but I really love her. And then I read the reviews, and they're good. It's like it's the only Transformer movie, you know, that has gotten good reviews, like seriously good reviews. Oh, you know what's slick? Let me explain some before we get back to the sport. We're talking about sports moments that made you cry, either because they were horrible or because they were great or because they were emotional. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, so there's this movie coming out Friday, Dan, called Replicas with my main man Keanu. And it's a science fiction movie where he clones his wife and kids because they died in a car accident. And he clones them and brings them back as clones. And obviously this is not going to be good. So this is a movie that's kind of been sitting on the shelf for a little while. And Byron Allen's Entertainment Studios company picked it up and they're releasing it. So I hear it's not good. I mean, I always root for Keanu, but I hear it's not good. And it's one of those movies that had Byron Allen's company not picked it up, it would have probably gone straight to video. So I noticed this is really, really slick. You know how now when you see commercials, the reason I thought of this is because on the Bumblebee, the commercials for Bumblebee, they show it's a big deal to show the Rotten Tomatoes rating. Like if you're like, we're 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, and which, you know, Bumblebee has a very high rating from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. And so I'm watching this commercial for Replicas and I noticed that it says 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm like, for this movie? And then I look, 98% want to see Not that 98% liked it, but 98% want to see it. Now, that could be six people who, you know, who went to Rotten Tomatoes and said, I'm really excited about Replicas, you know? And so, but you, the next time that if you guys are watching TV and the commercial for Replicas comes on, when they show the Rotten Tomatoes, because they show the Rotten Tomatoes logo and they really, the 98% is big, the logo is big, but the want to see part is very small and it's like stuck in the middle. And I was like, that's some pretty sneaky advertising right there. Like you think, oh, 98% of the critics like Replicas? Wow. No, it's 98% of the people who logged onto Rotten Tomatoes want to see it. I thought that was pretty funny. So they're even doing that now in the advertising. So, but anyway. Anyway, so I like, the point is I like Haley Steinfeld. I think she's great. All right, let's see. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about moments where you cry during sports, whether it because it's a great victory and you're unbelievably happy, or because it was a horrible loss or something terrible happened and it's sad, or it's emotional just because something happened with a player or there was an emotional moment on the field or whatever. 574 area code says, most disappointing sports moment as a fan of the late 70s Red Sox, Bucky Dent. Yeah. As a Bulls fan, favorite moment, Jordan with the shot. Well, he's had so many of those, though, right? I mean, there was one against, what was it, 98 was against Utah. And then Cleveland? He did it twice to Cleveland. Didn't he do it twice to Cleveland? No, that was, and then what was the game where, because, I'm a little fuzzy, because after 91, I kind of laid off on basketball. It's really funny because I was a huge Bulls fan in like the late 70s through the 80s and then in 91 when they won the championship. And then during the dynasty, I was like, whatever. I don't know why. For me, it was the moment, I'll give you another great sports moment, when they swept the damn Pistons in 91. And then obviously they went on to win the championship that year, and that was awesome. But for me, the emotional pinnacle that I reached that season was when they swept the Pistons, because the damn Pistons every year, every single year had the Bulls number up until then, and then they swept the Pistons, and I reacted better that night than when they won the championship. But what the hell was my point?
Well, it's Jordan, so it could be either the shrug game or the flu game.
The flu game. When was the flu game? Because he had like his numbers were ridiculous that night, right? And he was like in 102 fever, and he was sitting on the, he had towels over his head when he was sitting on the side.
It was also against the Jazz. He scored 38 points that night.
I don't think Michael Jordan's a human being. I really don't. He had like a horrible fever. He was dehydrated, you know. And when you're sick and you're dehydrated, the last thing you should do is do something incredibly strenuous and athletic. And he scores 38. Scores 38 points. Aaron in Wheaton said, There's a NASCAR upset. If the caution wasn't thrown, Kevin Harvick would have won it. I know WGN doesn't talk NASCAR too much, but maybe your truck driver listeners could relate. Yeah, I don't watch NASCAR. That's not my thing. I've seen Talladega Nights. Is Talladega Nights about NASCAR or is it about the other one?
No, it's NASCAR.
It's NASCAR, right? Yeah. What's the other one? It's NASCAR and what's
Formula One.
Oh, Formula One. Oh, yeah, that's different. NASCAR is, yeah, so Talladega Nights is about NASCAR. That's the most I know about NASCAR. Ricky Bobby, he's my favorite NASCAR driver. Shake and bake, baby. 630 area code says the Hawks losing to the Kings to go to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah. Yeah. Scott said my bad sports loss would have to be Dale Earnhardt dying on the last the 2001 Daytona 500, one of the worst days in NASCAR history. Yeah. That's actually mentioned in this article that we're talking about. That's horrible. That is horrible. How about this? John Starks coughs up the 1994 NBA Finals. So, the Bulls didn't win that year? Was that the only year they didn't win?
I believe that was the 2 year period where they
didn't,
right?
Because there was because they won in 92, 93, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't win 94, 95, and then 96, 97, 98. Yeah, that's it. That's right.
And if I believe correctly, that was the infamous phantom call on Scottie Pippen that allowed the Knicks to go to the finals.
Got it. The New York Knicks were on the brink of ending their 21-year titleless drought back in 1994. And to New York sports fans, that's an eternity. Yeah, thank you, New York sports fans. It's an eternity. 21 years is an eternity? Try 108. They went into Game 7 of the 94 NBA Finals against Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets in what was sure to be a great game, and it was, but it fell the way of the Rockets. The reason is John Starks. Starks, who was otherwise worshipped by New York sports fans, did not provide the output that the Knicks had come to expect from him. He was historically bad that night and cost the Knicks the title. So, poor guy. All right, we got a break and more sports moments that made you cry, whether it was out of joy or sadness or just emotion. 312-981-7200. The news is next. There's our first TV our TV theme that we always get multiple TV theme requests on Wild Card Wednesday. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, wild. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Lake Geneva Dan requesting the Alfred Hitchcock Presents theme. So there you go. We are talking about sports moments that made you cry or sports events that made you cry, whether because it was so bad and heartbreaking and it was a loss, or it was so great, like the Cubs winning the World Series, that it made you cry, or it was just emotional. There were personal stories about the athletes or the situation that made you cry. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, here's one of the Michael Jordan moments that that we're talking about here. This is the series-clinching shot in 1998 NBA Finals. Everybody in the world knew that 1998 would be Michael Jordan's final NBA season, but nobody knew how he would end his career. However, one thing is for sure, he still had it. As the game clock started to tick below 20 seconds, the Bulls trailed the Utah Jazz 86-85. Then Michael Jordan did what he had been doing his entire career. He robbed Karl Malone. Malone seemed destined for a post-move score that would have made it a three-point game until MJ came around the edge and stripped the ball from his grasp. He then calmly dribbled down the court as the clock began to tick down smaller and smaller, 12, 11, 10, and then he took off. He sprinted for Byron Russell's outside, and he seemed sure to drive to the hoop until he cut back on a perfect crossover, as anybody had ever seen, stepped back and shot a fadeaway jumper that has since lived in infamy. It was unbelievable. That was Jordan's last shot, and everyone knew it. Let's pretend that those years in Washington never happened. Michael Jordan was a living legend, and the way he ended his career is the way anyone would have wanted him to, and it was remarkable. Gary Anderson's 38-yard miss in the 1998 NFC Championship game. This may not have been as perfect as an offense as the 1998 Minnesota Vikings. They set the single season record and finished the season 15-1. They were destined to give the Vikings their first Super Bowl in franchise history, and they seemed to face no challenge in the NFC Championship game against the Atlanta Falcons. Fast forward to the fourth quarter, two minutes and 7 seconds remain in the game. Minnesota leads Atlanta 27-20, and are on the Falcons' 20-yard line, setting up a 38-yard chip shot for Gary Anderson, who had not missed a kick all season. Sure enough, Anderson hooks it, and the Falcons get the ball, score a touchdown, and win in overtime, leaving the Vikings with arguably the greatest team to never win a Super Bowl. Did you watch that series, Dan, back then?
No, I did not not catch that one, but it is legendary. You know, anytime you have a character from Minnesota from TV or movies, somehow that gets integrated into that person's life. Like, I've seen that in multiple different arenas, that storyline woven into, if they're from Minnesota.
Oh man.
And there's a football element that is somehow...
That's brought in.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. The 1994 Rangers Stanley Cup celebration. Back in 1994, the Rangers were in the midst of a 54-year championship drought. Keep in mind, these Rangers played in New York, which made it equivalent to a 254-year drought. Sure enough, the Rangers shocked the world on the back of Mark Messier. And wouldn't you know it, Stéphane Matteau. When the waiting was finally over, the Rangers shared an emotional moment with the Madison Square Garden crowd, and there had never been there was never as loud as it was that night. All right. How about this? Brett Favre's first retirement. How many times did Brett Favre retire?
I believe it was three when he finally called it. One was kind of like a mini one, but...
Yeah. I know it sounds stupid now, but no fan base in the history of sports was ever as attached to a player as the Green Bay Packers were to Brett Favre. Hey, Dan, do you remember back at Trib Tower when GN was at the Trib and we were still on the first floor before, you know, we moved upstairs to the seventh? You know, the men's room that was on the first floor, in the middle of the offices. There was a ladies' room and a men's room right there, right outside the conference room. So we had a conference room like in the middle of the offices downstairs. This is where on the first floor, and in that men's room, do you know how they have not urinal cakes, but they have the strainer in the bottom of the urinal? Do you remember what that one was downstairs?
I know. Yes, I don't remember the details, but I remember smiling when I saw it.
It was a Brett Favre urinal strainer. So it, essentially, when guys used the urinal, they were peeing on Brett Favre. Do you know who brought that in?
Who was that?
Cap. Cap brought that in, and it was in that urinal for years too. It was a few years it was in there. But yeah, I mean, the first time I saw it, I thought it was hilarious. And of course Cap brought it in. That was Dave Kaplan, brought it in and put it in the urinal. So essentially every time any male employee at WGN used that urinal, they were peeing on Brett Favre.
I can see him, imagine him buying it.
Oh yeah. Oh
this
yeah.
This is flat out phenomenal.
I think he said that every time he peed, too. This is flat out phenomenal while he's peeing on Brett Favre. All of this peeing on Brett Favre stuff, this is going to end up on the show on Friday. There's no question about it. They loved the Green Bay Packers. Well, I mean, they did love Brett Favre. There's no question. But seriously, and I know that we had a urinal thing, you know, and we peed on him. What's not to love about the guy? The guy was unbelievable. Brett Favre was unbelievable. That's another thing that the Packers have had a history of, like ridiculous quarterbacks. That's that. I mean, how many ridiculous quarterbacks have they had, Dan?
Several. I mean, there was that hilarious thing they did on the Bears game when they played recently, where they showed all the Bears quarterbacks since Brett Favre started his first game. And so, like, the left side of the screen was three: Brett Favre, Deshaun Kaiser, and Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. And there was like 27 names on the Bears quarterbacks.
That's pretty funny. And to have him walk away after a 13-3 season, which featured them one overtime from the Super Bowl, had all the Cheesehead universe, they were in mourning. Literally, several Green Bay stores were closed because of Favre's decision, and every soul in Green Bay was crying. They closed stores because Favre was going to retire? How about Mike Piazza hits the first home run after 9/11? The nation was in depression after 9/11, but when Mike Piazza unloaded on an eighth-inning pitch to put the Mets ahead 2-1 in the first baseball game since 9/11, strangers hugged each other in the aisles, and for a moment everything was okay. It was a tear-jerking moment that I will, for one, never forget, this author says. Yeah. Some texts are coming in. 312-981-7200, and we want to hear from you guys. Brian says, both my father and grandfather were diehard Blackhawks and Cubs fans. My grandfather passed away at the start of the Stanley Cup Finals. Oh, man, in 2010. My father passed away at the start of the Finals in 2015. Both of those series were very emotional at the end and during. Then the Cubs win the World Series in 2016 to top it off. On the positive side, I was down at the Cubby Bear in Wrigleyville for the 2013 Cup against Boston. What an atmosphere. Yeah, that was weird for me. You know the story. You know the story, Dan.
Yeah.
I was at the main stage in Evanston. That's where I saw them get the cup in 2013 with nobody that I knew. There were a couple of people because I hosted this Spelling Bee theater benefit for Lifeline Theater. And I had committed to it long before, you know, I committed to it long before I knew that either the Hawks were going to be in the finals or there was going to be a game scheduled that night. And there was, of course, and you know, so I was at this bar in Evanston, not at Ricochet's with all my friends, where I watched all the games. And, you know, many of the patrons that I hung out with Ricochet's, we would go down to the UC and see the games together. That's where I should have been. I didn't want to leave because I didn't want to miss any of the game. You know, a cab ride from Evanston to Lincoln Square, it's longer. That's like a 15-minute cab ride right there easily. And I didn't want to miss any of the game. I didn't want to listen to it on the radio. I wanted to watch it. I didn't want to listen to it in a cab. You know what I mean? On the radio. They get the cup and I'm in a cab. So I decided to stay there and witness the whole, you know, I mean, it was great because the 13 seconds was ridiculous. The two goals in 13 seconds was absolutely ridiculous. And you ended up, what's crazy about it, and you know this, Dan, is like if you're in a room full of strangers and you're all like fans of the team or right. whatever, you immediately bond.
Yep.
And like we were all best friends after the game. So I stayed there for a little while and watched a little bit of the post show, and then I made my way to Ricochet's and celebrated with my real friends. But that I never thought I would say, wait, where were you when they clinched the 2013? Where were you when they clinched the 2013? Do you remember?
13,
that was the shortened season.
Yeah, that was the shortened season. I was watching at home with my dad. So, yeah, that one we were at.
That was where they started out undefeated for like 5 months, weeks.
Right.
That was an incredible season. It was a shortened season. I didn't think that season was going to happen. I really didn't think it was going to happen. But it was amazing. 2010, when they won the cup, I was at Simon's. 2015, I was not feeling well. I was at home. I was laying on my couch watching it. So, let's see. Greg says, the 1991 All-Star Game, NHL All-Star Game at Chicago Stadium in the National Anthem. Yeah. No, that people have strong memories. For people who might not know, when the NHL All-Star Game took place, we had just started. The original Gulf War just started. Operation Desert Storm. Yes, Desert Storm was the original one. So, because what Shock and Awe was the second one, right? Okay, so 1991, it was Desert Storm, and it had just started, and this was one of the first big events after it had started. And first of all, the national anthem at the Chicago Stadium already was, you know, legendary at that point. And apparently, you could feel the whole barn shake. Jay says, I cried with elation when the Sox took the World Series in 2005 and witnessed the ticker tape parade trophy at Halstead and Van Buren. Big moment for Sox fans, obviously. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Why don't we take a quick break here, and we'll come back, and I want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Moments in sports that made you cry because you were so happy, you were sad, or it was just emotional and there was a great backstory to it. 312-981-7200. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! That means you can get wild with cards on a Wednesday. No, it means that you can call up and request a song, any artist, anything. It's wild. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Paul requesting Eric Clapton with Promises. And again, you can use that number, 312-981-7200, to join us. We're talking about sports moments and sports and games and stuff like that that made you cry, either through elation or sadness or because there was an emotional backstory to it. 312-981-7200. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5 o'clock and coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, Dan, I just thought of a moment where my friends and I all got teary-eyed. Opening day at Wrigley Field, 1998. It was the start of the season, the first season without Harry in the booth. He had died during right before spring training. He passed away right before spring training in 1998, and they did this really wonderful tribute to Harry. Right before the game, they did this really when they released balloons and they did all kinds of really cool stuff and so. Oh, and I cried when Ron Santo died. When Ron Santo passed away, that was a big one, a real big one. I found out listening to Steve and Johnny. That's where you working then? You were? Yeah.
I was. Yeah.
Yeah, that was 2010.
Yeah.
It was December 2000. It's like December 10th or something like that, 2010. And I was listening to Steve and Johnny. It was in a very weird situation at that time. I was cohabitating with my wife, and we were not. I had one room, and she had the rest of the place, and I was in that room just laying on the bed, listening to Steve and Johnny. And at that, there was a period of time there because we cohabitated for about 5 months like that before I found an apartment and moved out, and so I spent a lot of time in that room drinking whiskey. So that's what I was doing. That's what I was doing that night. I was listening to Steve and Johnny and drinking whiskey. So of course I was extra emotional, you know. But they did a really beautiful job though at Wrigley with handling, you know, the first and that season turned out to be so great. 1998. That was a really great season. And everybody was like, "We're going to win this for Harry, you know, in honor of Harry, we're going to win this." And then Brant Brown dropped the ball. But that wasn't really that, because there was a very exciting one-off game against the Giants and all that stuff. But that was a great season. That was a really fun season of ball at Wrigley. So many characters on that team. That was great. You know what else was great? 89. 89 was great because Don Zimmer was a lunatic. And I love the boys of Zimmer. That was a fantastic team. And Don Zimmer, nuts. I love Don Zimmer. I love him. What was the series? It was a series against Boston. Oh my God! Why am I blanking on the pitcher's name who threw
Pedro Martinez?
Yeah, Martinez threw him across. Zimmer was a nut. He was, man. Go Popeye. Yeah, but that 98 season was fun. That was fun. I will say though. I mean, we're talking about the highs and lows of that season. Brant Brown, man. I mean, I was at that damn game. I mean. Do we have the? I think I have the soundbite of Ron.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about sadness,
oh.
his just obviously he wasn't crying, but if you could encapsulate crying and sadness in a groan, it is that.
It's just, the call is, you know, it was funny. He was talking about this, you know, like when it happened, after it happened. I can't see if we've got it or not. I think it would be under B for Brant Brown, right?
It looked like all your Rons were in one spot, though.
Oh, Ron Cooper. That's him talking about Cooper. I'm talking about Andy. Me. Yay. No. I thought it was under... I thought we used to have it under Brant Brown. But I don't see it. So, anyway. I don't think we have it. I don't know. So anyway, if we find it, I'll play it. But that's, you know, it's not the most pleasant thing to hear because, I mean, and you're absolutely right. The sadness in his voice, I mean, that call. And he was talking about how, you know, after it happened, people were interviewing him. You know, they wanted to get his thoughts on it because obviously, you know, Ron Santo was the biggest Cub fan that ever lived, you know. And he was like, "Oh, I'm talking to this guy." He was complaining. he was complaining to Pat that he was being interviewed, and they kept playing your call over and over again. Because if you hear, because it's Pat doing the call, he dropped the ball, and then in the background you just hear Ron going, "No, oh no." That's one of those moments, man. And my friends and I, we were like, yeah, man, when we get out of here, we're going to the Brat Stop. You know, it was one of those deals where it's like, this is fantastic. We're going to go to the Brat Stop. We're going to celebrate. And it's going to be great. And we just drove home sad. Went straight from Milwaukee. Went right to Simon's. That's terrible. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. In 2016, my answering machine even said, the Cubs are going to win the World Series. You know, I said, and I hope it's in my lifetime, because I was only 84 then, you know. So anyway, that's my message, and I'm standing here in a Cubs shirt right now, and I saw the entire World Series on a small hospital television set. My friend Betty had double bypass surgery, so I saw the entire series there. On the final game, where I'm sorry, it's after 10 o'clock, there's a rain delay. And I said, Betty, I can't stay. I said, this could go on for hours. On the way home, they're taking a tarp off. Guess what? When I got home, I got to see the winning hit on a big screen.
Oh, there you go. That's great. That's a great story.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, nobody's
that's not memorable, I'll tell you.
Well, everybody in Chicago, I should say, is going to remember where they were that night. I mean, it's going to be, Andy Mazur passed out. Andy Mazur was in the studio on the seventh floor over at Trib Tower. They were going to do post game, and he passed out. He fell out of the chair. So, Jim, that's a great story. That is a great story. I remember watching that game, Dan, when the rain delay started, I couldn't believe it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Now there's a rain delay? And then we were on right after. We talked about it all night, all morning, I should say, all morning long. Yeah, that was a fun night. Let's see, what do we got here? Canadian Bill says, I have four. Brett Favre's game a day after his dad died. Oh, yeah, the game after his dad died. Saku Loivu and Mario Lemieux comeback, all their comebacks after cancer. The day the Montreal Expos left town, but they will be back within 10 years. You know why I miss the Expos? Yeah. If you grew up in Chicago, you know what we were just listening to. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! And that, of course, was the Garfield Goose and Friends theme. And Tom requested that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 Live. I'm telling you, Dan. This is around the hour
About 23 minutes early.
When the lack of sleep starts, I don't even know what the hell radio station I'm on. For those people who don't know, I get a little loopy when the morning after one of my film club screenings, and we had a screening of Slapshot, because I don't go home. I come straight here after that, and then sometimes I try to get some sleep before the screening, and I didn't, and so sometimes I get a little bit nuts. So, and we're at that moment there where where it gets a little crazy. Anyway, we're back here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. And Steve Rzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is a Wednesday morning, and that means it's Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. You can get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We are talking about sports moments that make you cry, games or whatever, sports things that made you cry, whether it be in elation or in sadness, or there is an emotional backstory to what has happened. Vic, do you have any sports moments that made you really, really happy or really, really sad?
Yeah, there was one. I don't remember the exact year. I know it was in the 80s, and it was right when the Cowboys they went on a really bad run. I want to say it lasted nearly a decade where they just weren't any good. The 49ers beat the Cowboys. I think it may have been a NFC championship. It was a big game right at the end of the season. May have been the championship game. I'm not sure. But anyway, the 49ers beat the Cowboys. I was a Dallas fan at the time because my dad was Cowboys from Texas, and I was just raised to be a Cowboys fan.
Sure.
But I literally cried. I was a boy, though.
Yeah.
But I literally cried. And I was in my uncle's house watching it, which we lived right outside the Oakland area. And they were all 49ers fans. So they thought it was, they got a little tickled at the fact that I was crying.
Oh, man.
So that stuck with me.
Oh, yeah, I could see why.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You watched that game outside of Oakland?
I did.
With a bunch of 49ers fans. Terrible.
Cowboys jersey on. Yeah.
Oh, Oh, man.
You know, it's funny. I just went out there to the Bay Area not too long ago and visited with my aunt. My uncle has since passed, but my aunt and a bunch of my family out there, all 49ers fans, and even a few Packers fans. No Bears fans. But that came up in the hospital room.
Did it really?
It did. Oh, I remember you crying. Yeah. Good old Auntie M.
Even all of these years later,
yeah,
they bring it up to give you a hard time.
Isn't that funny how,
oh, man,
how we put so much importance on sport? I remember it.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can understand. I've gotten emotional over sports in the past.
Sure,
no question about it. No question.
Jeannie and I never get emotional about sports, her being a Packers fan and I'm a Bears fan. There's no problems at all there.
Yeah, sure. Sure, I bet. I bet. And she a Brewers fan too?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. All right. Oh, that would. Oh, God.
And I know
that
how must to have pick
been.
Them.
That must have been a tough one-off game for you then. This past season.
Yeah. She is not a big talker though. She's pretty kind.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be really. You know, people can be real jerks about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And like get in your face and things like that.
Now, I get that when I go to visit her family in Racine, Wisconsin. I get prodded quite a bit.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, now that the Bears are better, they were very quiet this season.
Oh, I bet they
didn't
were.
Didn't hear much from them.
Oh, man. All right. 312-981-7200. You know, there's another thing. Really quickly, in order to make good moments, there are also like some weird superstitions that a lot of sports players and sports fans have. One of my favorites was it was during the 2010 run that the Hawks had in the 2010 run. It was during the playoffs, and I can't remember exactly what game or what round it was, but we were watching it at my friend Benji's house, and he had a giant screen TV, so there were like 11 of us there, and. Well, more than a lot. I think it was like 15, 20 people in this apartment. And this apartment, by the way, was right. It was my friend Benji and Britton. They both lived there, and it was an apartment above the Davis Theater, and so it always smelled like hot buttered popcorn. Like the apartment smelled like hot buttered popcorn. So it was like intoxicating to stay in that apartment, especially in the hallway when you were leaving, when you were going down the stairs, because the stairway, the entrance to the apartment. Was right next to the marquee, like right next to the entrance of the Davis. So as you're walking in and you walk up, all you smell is popcorn. So anyway, we're all watching the game, and we're all like sitting in the same spot that we sat the game before. People were standing exactly where they were standing the game before, and the Hawks were down. Were down one, and one of the guys went into the bathroom. And the Hawks scored while he was in the bathroom, and we made him stay in the bathroom because they scored while he was in the bathroom. Like you can't, and he didn't. Well, there was a small TV in the bathroom, so he's like, you can watch the TV in there. If you need a beer, somebody will bring it to you, but you're not leaving that bathroom. They did win the game. They won the game, but he stayed. And we made him. I'm not kidding. We made him stay in the bathroom.
Did you give him some credit at least?
For, oh yeah, no, yeah.
That's a fan, right?
But that's the thing. But that's the thing though, because that's how stupid like superstitions are. Like when you're watching games, you have to stand in the same spot and have the same. We had in the 2003 when the Cubs had the run in 2003. I watched most of those games at Simon's, and there was a can of Old Style that someone had brought. It was Chris Anderson who will be joining us next week to talk about the Warren Zevon gig, the birthday party for Warren Zevon. He had like a can of Old Style. I can't remember the backstory, the real long backstory behind it. But this can of Old Style, I think he or somebody was about to open it, and somebody hit a home run, and they were like, "Don't open the Old Style." And that can of Old Style, they had just gotten this can of Old Style out. Something great happened. I don't know the whole backstory. So this can of Old Style, Chris would bring it to the bar, this can of Old Style, and we'd pass it around the bar, and people would rub it during the during the games. You know, people would just pass it around and rub it and for good luck. He had to rub the old style can for good luck. Mm-hmm. Didn't help because he brought it there the night of the Bartman game. So it didn't have its psychic powers that night.
There's a reason they call us fanatics.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Go back in the. It was like get back in the bathroom now. And he did it too, you know, because we were not kidding around. We're like, no, you can't come out here and watch the game with us now. They scored while you were in the can. That means you got to stay in the can. And he's like, all right, I guess I understand. That's how stupid all of this is. This guy who we made stay in the bathroom was like, yeah, no, that makes sense to me. That totally makes sense. I should watch the rest of the game in this bathroom. And they had two bathrooms, so people were using the other bathroom. They were using the bathroom upstairs. He was in the downstairs bathroom. So we were like, he can't leave the bathroom unless you want to go in there and pee next to the guy. He's not going to leave the bathroom. They won the game though. So anyway, I wonder whatever happened to that can of old style. I think we probably whipped it against the wall or something with it. I think we destroyed it. I would imagine. Oh man, Tim. Send it in a text. We're talking about sports moments that make you cry because of sadness or happiness or an emotional story involved. Tim says, I don't know about one of the greatest or worst sports moments, but Hulk Hogan full body slamming Andre the Giant was a bit shocking. I think Hulk Hogan understood the gravity of that moment when he did it. You see the gravity of that moment? You see how he put that in?
All right.
I will say this. That was pretty damn impressive. I mean, if you can full body slam Andre the Giant, that's pretty impressive. 815 area code, the death of Dan Weldon, who is an Indy 500 champ. 815 area code says the Olympics with the miracle on. Oh my God, the miracle on ice! How did that not come up already? And at the screening last night of Slapshot, we talked about the movie Miracle because we started talking about other hockey movies. And so, of course, Miracle came up because Miracle is one of the greatest hockey movies of all time. You know why? Because Kurt Russell's in it. One of the greatest moments in sports, the Miracle on Ice, 1980 Olympics. Incredible. 708 area code says the 1996 Masters. Greg Norman was six strokes ahead going into Sunday, and he lost to Nick Faldo by five strokes. I've never gotten emotional over golf. Now, miniature golf, that's a whole nother thing. If my putt doesn't go across the bridge over the water, you know, or if I can't get past the windmill, I get sad. I get real, real sad. Brian in Montana says the 85 Bears in the Super Bowl watching Walter Payton on the sidelines with his head in his hands after not scoring a touchdown. Have people forgiven Ditka for giving the ball to Fridge? Do you think people have forgiven Ditka for that?
Yeah.
I mean, they won the Super Bowl, you know, so...
He's such a larger-than-life figure at this point. And obviously, time heals all wounds, but I think it is one of those things where it's always just kind of...
I was mad. I mean, I watched the game. I followed that series, but... Peyton didn't score a touchdown in that series, did he? In that game, he didn't score a touchdown, and he gave the ball to the Fridge,
right?
And that's, but again, they won, so you know, I guess all is forgiven. I remember my dad being furious about that, really mad. So, all right, 312-981-7200. Go stand in the bathroom. So stupid. Let's take a break here on WGN. More sports moments that made you cry, either because you were happy or you're sad or they were emotional in some regard. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything. Larry requesting The Cure, Just Like Heaven. And we are back. By the way, Dan, you know, we had dinner at the Murray Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant before the screening of Slapshot last night, and the food was great, and it was really a lot of fun. And I don't know if they, you know, if they knew that I would be pleased with this, but they had the 80s, you know, the 80s music station on, or whatever, the channel, you know, and they were playing jams, like, the whole time we were there. Like, some of my favorite 80s music, like, back to back to back to back to back, I was happy. I mean, they played The Fix, they played the Thompson Twins. It was fantastic. So, Duran Duran. Great. We are talking about sport moments or sports that made you cry because it was either a great moment or a sad moment. And let's see. We've got more of these moments here. 312-981-7200. How about this? Cal Ripken Jr. takes a lap. Ripken went out there every day and played without complaining and had a respect for the Orioles fan base like nothing I'd ever seen before in my life. So, when he finally broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive games streak record, they would not stop cheering. After five innings had passed, he went out for a curtain call and then took his place in the dugout. However, he was forced to come back when the Baltimore crowd would not stop cheering. They went on and on and on and on and on, eventually forcing Cal to take a lap around the stadium. It was an extremely touching moment. Hey, you know, I got to interview Cal Ripken Jr.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was filling in for Cochran, and he came in studio. First of all, he's a massive guy. He's a big dude. I'm not a big dude. I'm 5'8". You know, I'm a little weasel. But I mean, I had no idea he was that big. And one of the nicest athletes I've ever met. Really, really good guy. But I remember one of my friends used to make fun of Cal Ripken because it was like, because he has the best attendance record? But that, you know, that's impressive to play, you know, that. I mean, first of all, you're playing a sport every single game. There's a risk of you getting hurt. And it wasn't like he was bad. It wasn't like he played every day and he sucked. He played every day and he was good. But like I had friends who totally made fun of that record. So who cares about that record? It's because, you know, when you were in school, did they give you a prize for, like, did you get like anything for best attendance?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I got Sox tickets. They used to give us that. What did you get? Do you remember?
Yeah, we also received this. It was back when the Cubs Sox game was the exhibition game. We got tickets to that.
Yeah, we would get Sox tickets, which of course I was disappointed about because I, you know, lived six blocks away from Wrigley Field, and the school I went to was four blocks away from Wrigley Field. So it was a little like, why are you giving me Sox tickets? One, it's really hard to get to Comiskey if you're like 12. Two, I could walk to Wrigley. Three, I don't like the Sox. But yeah, that was our reward for most attendance or best attendance. And I would never get any kind of other, like, I never got any kind of academic award. You know what I mean? So it's a see, like except, unlike Cal Ripken, I would show up every day and not be good. That was the difference between Cal Ripken and I. Did I ever tell you the story when we that my friends and I went on that epic baseball trip back in 1992?
Right.
We stopped in a bunch of places, including Baltimore, and it was the year that Camden Yards opened up. It was the very first year, and it was an incredible stadium. So, you know that Babe Ruth's house, where he was born and where he grew up, is in Baltimore. And so did I tell you this?
No.
So we went to a lot of places. I mean, when we got to Baltimore, the first thing we did was we had to go to the stadium to either scalp tickets, because no, you couldn't get tickets. It was, you know, the very first season of Camden Yards. It was a brand new park. So we had to get tickets off the street. So we got our tickets, put the tickets away. And then I, of course, insisted that we had to go to any place that Edgar Allan Poe had ever been. And we went to his grave and all that stuff, which is in a really, really seedy part of town. Let me just say that. If you're going to visit Baltimore, and you want to go to Poe's grave, go. I suggest going with a group and going in the day. That's my suggestion, because it's a pretty seedy part of town. And it's cool, though. I mean, I highly suggest that you go, because it's awesome, especially if you're a Poe if you're a Poe fan. So, and then we're like, hey, Babe Ruth's house is not very, you know, let's go to Babe Ruth's house. So we go to Babe Ruth's house, and this is like the house he was born in. Like, they actually have, you know, like the bedroom that he was born in the house. The bedroom that he was born in had like a velvet rope in front of it, so you couldn't go in, and it had like the furniture. I don't know, it was probably replica furniture, obviously, or something. So you can walk through the house, and it had little parts, you know, little plaques up on the wall. But one thing that that we were like astonished by, like, this is Babe Ruth's house. This is where the Babe was born. Okay. You know, one of the greatest baseball players in the history of the sport, and acknowledged by everybody to be that. And the living room on the first floor, when you walk in, living room on the first floor, and I don't know if it's still like this or not, had a gigantic display case that took up a wall and a half, like a glass shadow box display case, filled with nothing but Cal Ripken stuff. Pictures and jerseys and all kinds of stuff. And then if you walked up to I'll never forget this. If you when I walked in, I'm like, when did Cal Ripken move into Babe Ruth's house? How is this legal? Is Cal Ripken allowed to take up half of the room in Babe Ruth's house? And then on top of this whole display shadow box case filled with pictures and memorabilia and stuff, you could press a button. It was like, you know, one of the things that you could press a button. And it played Nobody Does It Better. They played like three verses of Nobody Does It Better. And while we were in Babe Ruth's house, like walking around, you heard Nobody Does It, because people kept pressing the button. I can't imagine being an employee at Babe, you know, like a security guard or something, who has to stand in Babe Ruth's house and listen to Nobody Does It Better 5,000 times a day. I just thought that was weird. I was like, what's all this Cal Ripken stuff doing here? It doesn't make, there's no connection, except that Cal Ripken was, you know, at that time, 1992, you know, he was Cal Ripken. But still, it's Babe Ruth's house, man. Move out. Take Carly Simon with you. It was still cool, though. All right. I can't remember who they played, but the Orioles destroy. I can't remember who they played, but it was Oakland. It was Oakland, and they destroyed him. I remember they destroyed him. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got the news coming up, and then more sports stories that make you cry. Right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back on 720 WGN. Nick DiGiulio here. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, baby, Wildcard Wednesday. And that was 309 area code requesting Captain and Tennille with Going Bananas. Wow. I don't believe that was as big a hit as Muskrat Love. So, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about sports moments or games that made you cry. Maybe because they were bad and they were heartbreaking and sad, and or maybe because they were great and inspiring, or maybe just because they were very emotional. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. So there you go. This all started. We talked with Kevin Powell earlier in the show, and of course we talked about the outcome of the Bear game on Sunday evening. And so that, of course, got us started on like horrible, bad endings to sporting events. But that we opened it up to just events that made you cry. So we were just talking about Cal Ripken Jr. when he broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak record. He had to come out for a curtain call and run around, and everybody went nuts. And so there was that. And now, how about this one? The Edmonton Oilers trade Wayne Gretzky. The writer here for who wrote this article says, I can assure you that when Gretzky was traded, he wasn't the only man in Edmonton crying. You know, it's interesting about him being traded from Edmonton, which was of course a shock. Nobody thought that he would ever, you know, leave Edmonton. And then suddenly, like, this kind of Yoko Ono scenario happened. that people started to talk about. And of course, you know, Yoko Ono, there's this, you know, theory that, like, she basically broke up the Beatles and it was her fault. She, like, basically took John away from the Beatles. I don't buy any of that, by the way. I don't believe that at all. But then they started doing, like, a variation on it. When Gretzky got, I remember this specifically, I remember this big time. When Gretzky got traded to the Kings, I vividly remember Edmonton fans blaming Janet Jones, who is still his wife. And Janet Jones, he started dating Janet Jones, who was an actress and a model who lived in L.A. and was from L.A. And so they blamed her. She took it on the chin big time for Gretzky getting traded. And so that's who she took the blame. I just remember people yelling and screaming and hating Janet Jones because Janet Jones is responsible for Wayne Gretzky, the greatest hockey player of all time, leaving Edmonton. And on top of that, not just leaving Edmonton, but moving to America. And not just that, but moving to L.A., which is a climate that a lot of Canadians think shouldn't have a hockey team. So, and so this was a real big deal. And Janet Jones, by the way, who, if you guys don't remember Janet Jones, I mean, besides being Wayne Gretzky's wife, she was in some movies, and she was in, you know, she did a lot of modeling and stuff. And she was in a movie called American Anthem, which is a terrible movie. But she Janet Jones is as far as I'm concerned, one of the quintessential 80s babes. Like, if you go back, you know, and look at if they were to compile a list of the most quintessential 80s babes, Janet Jones would be either at the top or very, very near the top of 80s babes. And she was in this movie, American Anthem, which is a terrible movie. It's about gymnastics. Mitch Gaylord was the lead in it, and it was Albert Magnoli who directed Purple Rain. It was like his follow-up to Purple Rain, and it's an absurd movie, but Janet Jones is stunningly hot in it, like ridiculously hot. And so for those of us who are not from Canada or from Edmonton, we were like, I totally understand why this dude moved. I completely understand why he moved from Edmonton to L.A. I would move too if this was the woman that I would gain for leaving. So anyway, that was a big deal. It was a big deal, and a lot of people blame Janet Jones. So, but she was, oh my God, an 80s babe. All right, let's see. Here are some more big moments where people cried because of sports. And the Red Sox reversed the curse. 2004 seemed no different than any other year. The Red Sox and Yankees, arguably the best teams, two best teams in baseball, locked up in the 2004 ALCS, where the Yankees were sure to advance to the Fall Classic once again. They jumped out to a 3-0 lead in the series, and it seemed to be all over but the crying, until the Red Sox forged the greatest comeback in baseball history as they reversed the curse of the Bambino, which had plagued them for 86 years. They won four straight and shocked the Yankees. Red Sox fans were partying like they were on top of the world. It was finally over. After 86 years, the Sox finally beat the Yankees. Red Sox fans shed tears of joy, while Yankee fans shed tears of disbelief and sorrow. Now, I have to say, I remember I had directed a show during that series at the factory. I'd just finished directing a show, or it was running, and we had two huge Red Sox fans in that show, like massive Red Sox fans. And I remember, you know, we would, like, if we had had a rehearsal or there was a performance, we would go and we would watch the show, and we would watch it at Chief O'Neill's. This was when the Factory Theater was over on Elston, and we would go across the street, so we would watch the games at Chief O'Neill. And I remember these people going nuts when they came back from a 3-0 deficit and they won four games in a row, and it was against the Yankees. Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was huge. So, let's see what else we got here. The Cowboys lost the game by 4 points. This is the thing. Maybe this is a different one that we're talking about. I know that Vic was a Cowboys fan until he moved here. Jackie Smith's dropped touchdown pass in Super Bowl eight. The scene was Super Bowl 13. The scene was Super Bowl 13. The Dallas Cowboys trailed the Pittsburgh Steelers 21-14 in the third quarter. On third down, Cowboys quarterback spotted reverse tight end Jackie Smith wide open in the end zone for what should have been an easy 10-yard touchdown pass, but Smith dropped the pass, which hit him right in the hands, and the Cowboys were forced to settle for a field goal, which cut the deficit to 4, and the Cowboys lost the game by 4 points. You know, my buddy Joe, who I've talked about many times, my late pal Joe, who I've talked about many times on the show, he's the guy. Hey, listen. He used to always say, like, anytime we watched football together, when a bunch of us would get together and watch a game on a Sunday or something, anytime somebody would miss a pass, Joe would say this. Dan, Joe would say this. Anytime somebody missed a pass, and even if it wasn't an easy pass. You know, like this pass that we're talking about here, it hit him right in the hands, and, you know, there's no excuse. But Joe used to always say this, even if a guy dives for it and it hits his hands at some point, Joe would always say, hey, listen, if you can touch it, you can catch it. That he said it every time somebody dropped the pass, every time, even if, like I said, even if it wasn't an easy pass, hey, if you can touch it, you can catch it. I remember we were watching a game one time. Scott was there, and it was Joe, and, you know, the whole group of us were sitting on the couch. We're watching the game, and Scott Oaken says, I can't stand. He goes, I can't stand handsome quarterbacks. I just can't stand them. They make me nuts. And so they were bringing a backup. I can't remember what game it was, but they were bringing they knocked out the starting quarterback. So they're bringing in another quarterback. It was a Bear game, and it was Bears were playing somebody else, and I don't remember what it was. And the Bears knocked out their starting quarterback. And so they're bringing in the backup quarterback. And Scott had made this statement many times. You know, like, I can't stand good looking quarterbacks. I can't stand handsome quarterbacks. They make me crazy. So when they're bringing in the other team is bringing in the new quarterback, Joe goes, oh, man, you're going to hate this friggin' guy. He's gorgeous. And we still say that stuff, too. Like, you know, like, during games, I don't watch a lot of football with my friends anymore, but during games, like, this will get texted to our inner circle. Like, if someone drops a pass, if you can touch it, you can catch it. We text to each other, you know, or if a good-looking quarterback is playing, well, you're going to hate this guy. He's friggin' gorgeous. Only Joe didn't say friggin'. Oh, you're going to hate this guy. He's friggin' gorgeous. Oh, man. So many great Joe stories, man. The celebrity encounters are still the best ones. The Al Jorgensen and the Oliver Stone. Those are still the best. Oh, yeah. Heaven and Earth was a real treat. He said Oliver Stone. All right. Hey, if you can touch it, you can catch it. All right. Let's take a quick break for weather, and we'll come back. We'll wrap this up. We're talking about sports moments that made you cry for whatever reason. 312-981-7200. Iron in his thighs? Softness in his eyes and iron in his thighs? Did I hear that correctly? Wow. All right. Welcome back, everybody. It's Wild Card Wednesday continues. 301 area code requesting the Mighty Hercules opening theme song. Okay.
And yes, according to the lyrics, iron in his thighs.
Iron in his thighs. And what was it in his eyes?
Softness.
Softness. Softness in his eyes, but iron in his thighs. Good old Iron Thighs Hercules. That's what they used to call him. That was his nickname. Iron Thighs Hercules. Yeah, Iron Thighs. Wasn't that show with Raymond Burr? Oh, no. That was Ironside. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell, and also coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. So let's go through some of the bigger ones that were pointed out here on this article from Bleacher Report, which is about moments in sports where it's okay to cry. And these are for all reasons. These are reasons for sadness, happiness, or emotion, or just a really inspiring story. Right in the top here is Steve Bartman cost the Cubs the 2003 NLCS. That's not true. He didn't cost the Cubs. He didn't cost the Cubs. Perhaps Alex Gonzalez could turn a routine double play. Maybe that could be a thing. You think, Dan? Do you think maybe Alex Gonzalez, you know, turning a very routine double play?
I think that would have been very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. When you've got almost a century without a championship, you're willing to blame anybody for a loss. Back in 2003, the Chicago Cubs had their best chance in over 60 years to be World Series champions. They had a great team and a 3-0 lead in Game 6, 3-0 lead in Game 6 of the NLCS, a game that would have sent them to the World Series with a win. Just 5 outs from the Fall Classic, the Cubs were pumped, and destiny seemed to be on their side until Marlins second baseman Luis Castillo hit a pop fly into foul play. It seemed to be a routine play for Cubs left fielder Moises Alou until Steve Bartman got in his way. Alou was angry, jumping up and down in anger. The Cubs quickly got into position, anxious to get those last 5 outs, but they just choked the whole game up. The Marlins exploded for 8 runs in the inning. Many people hold Steve Bartman accountable for the choke, but whether it was his fault or not, Cubs fan everywhere were tearing up at the possibility of letting another opportunity slip through the fingers. That was a terrible night, man. That was just a terrible night. Terrible. I still think, for me at least, and as heartbreaking as that night was, well, the next night is actually when they got eliminated, but as terrible as that 2003 was, 84 for me was I mean, I don't even know what to say. I still hate Steve Garvey. I hate Steve Garvey with every fiber of my being. Oh man! Oh, look who's listening! Look who's here! It's Eddie Volkman. Eddie, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Nick. My dad was as a kid, grew up in Boston, so he loved the Red Sox, and you know, of course, most of his life was in Chicago. But you know, always held on to that lifelong love. So he cried. We all did for him when the Red Sox won, and then. He didn't, unfortunately, live long enough to see the Cubs win the World Series. He died just like a couple of years before that.
Yeah.
So that was a sad moment there, and happy that they won. But I thought about him at the same time. So, you know, those were watershed moments there. But the other thing you were talking about earlier, it wasn't the first of the recent 3 Blackhawks Stanley Cups, but during the second run, I missed 3 goals while I was in the bathroom. But then I made the mistake of putting it out on Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, once you do that, then everybody starts blowing up my phone. I mean, the people I knew that had my phone number would text me, you know, when they're down by a goal. Are you in the bathroom? So then I actually went in the bathroom. I went in the bathroom for one, I forgot what important game, and they scored while I was in the bathroom. So now I'm into it. So now I believe it. And so for the rest of that series, and then the next Stanley Cup, it was just, you know, people would get downright screaming at me. Like, are you in the bathroom? I'd say, no. I said, what's wrong with you?
This is exactly the same thing that we did to our friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Your buddy, yeah. But, you know, But you had, like, he had four guys yelling at him. I had my entire social media presence.
yelling at Eddie Volkman to go in the bathroom so the Hawks can score.
Well, and then the thing is, between the time of the first championship and the most recent, streaming video and television came into play, and then it stopped working. Because I could still see it, and the Blackhawks were like, "No, you can see it. You need to actually miss the goal for us to score it."
Got it. Got it.
Doesn't work anymore.
Exactly. You got to have the right. You got to have the right mojo, Eddie.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good morning.
Take care, buddy. There you go, Eddie Volkman. He was referring to his father. For people who might not know, Harry Volkman was his dad. One of the greatest weathermen. One of the greatest personalities to come out of this city. Well, he's from Boston to come out of this city. He was great. That's pretty funny. But that's really funny. It's like, go get in the bathroom. That's essentially what we did to our friend. We said, you can't leave the... We made him stay in the bathroom. It's so stupid. Now, we mentioned the Boston Red Sox. Eddie just mentioned the Boston Red Sox. How about this one, Dan? This is, it has local ties. Bill Buckner's error.
Yep.
Bill Buckner's, and I felt terrible for Bill Buckner because I was a huge Bill Buckner fan. When he was a Cub, I loved him. And he had a great glove, too. That's the thing about it. Great first baseman, Bill Buckner. I mean, one of the most notorious errors in the history of baseball he's responsible for. Just one out away from winning the 1986 World Series, the Red Sox were ready to celebrate. Mookie Wilson stepped to the plate as the Mets' final hope. After dragging out a long at bat, Wilson hit a little dribbler down the first baseline that wouldn't have been a difficult play in a little league. But sure enough, it went right through the legs of Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner. The Mets took Game 6 and then Game 7. So Game 6 is like notorious. It's just if you go to Boston and you say Game 6, you'll get punched in the mouth. Then it's not a good thing to say. But that's the other thing about it. Like, Bill Buckner was such a great player, you know, and he was on both sides of the, you know, on defense and on offense. He was a great player. Do you remember the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm? Where Buckner showed up and they made a joke about it.
No.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. I can't remember the specifics, but the episode ended where Larry David had a baseball, a very valuable baseball that he had taken and he had to return. You know, something Larry did wrong. You know, like something Larry David did wrong. Bill Buckner shows up as himself, and I can't remember why he's on the episode other than that he's Bill Buckner. But at a very crucial moment, he tosses. They're in an apartment which has like a balcony, and he tosses the ball to Bill Buckner, and he drops it, and it goes and it flies over the balcony, and they lose the ball because of Bill Buckner. So that setup. I'm being very vague on the setup because I don't remember the exact joke, but Buckner came on that show and joked about it. And it was really funny, and it's like good for him, for Bill Buckner, you know, after all these years, just being able to get out there and joke about it. So, all right, we got a break here. The news is coming up next, and we got some final texts here that we're going to get to about the sports stories.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m.
as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Wednesday morning, that means it's been Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday! 312-981-7200. 262 area code requesting Jimmy Soul if you want to be happy. And we are talking about sports moments or games or things like that that made you cry, whether it be for a good reason or a bad reason or an emotional reason of some kind. We'll wrap this up here with some texts. Tom says, a great game was the one in Minnesota. Jim McMahon was out for some reason, came in at halftime and brought the Bears back. Was that 85?
I don't remember if it was 85 or 86, but yeah, definitely in that range.
Because I remember 85,
they brought McMahon in. He didn't start. I don't think they took him out or something. But he came back in, and everybody was convinced that he was going to make them. He was going to bring a comeback to them, for them, and beat Miami. Rick says, when the Blackhawks won the first cup, I'm 60, and honestly, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime. The first cup in this era, in 2010. I'm assuming. 815 area code says, Whitney Houston's Star-Spangled Banner performance. It was the Bills-Giants 1991 wide right Super Bowl. Veterans in the audience were crying, and it still moves me. That again was the Super Bowl during the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. Bonnie from Kenosha said, my dad was a huge Cubs fan. He died January of 2015. I was watching the game with my residents in the assisted living where I worked, and it was very sad for me. I can imagine. 815 area code says, Ron Santo's speech when they retired his number at Wrigley. That was great. Yeah, that was beautiful. Good old Ron. 847 area code says, Jimmy V's speech about dealing with cancer at a sports awards show. Squat says, Brian's song made me cry like a baby. I mean, I can't talk, blubbering snot everywhere. It's to the point that I will leave the room during that last scene. I think everybody, we've talked about movies that make you cry and things that make you cry. I think everybody agrees that that Brian's song is one of those movies that just destroys everybody who sees it. Alan in North Carolina said, New Orleans Saints winning the Super Bowl. I didn't expect the emotions to wash over me, but being a diehard Hoot At fan in Panthers country added to the thrill. Charlie B. texts in, I cried like a baby during the 1990 NCAA tournament when Bo Kimble shot his first free throw left-handed in honor of his friend, the late Hank the Bank Gathers, who died on court earlier that year. Wow. Wow. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that story. 414 area code says, when Tiger Woods won the British Open in 2006, it was his first win after his father Earl died, and he cried in the arms of his caddy Steve Williams. Here's another sad one. Pat Tillman leaves for the military and then dies in friendly fire. In May of 2002, Cardinals all-pro safety Pat Tillman turned down a $3 million contract to join the military and fight in the Iraqi war. If you talk about patriotism, that's it. Nobody had more than Tillman, who ended his career just as it was getting started to defend our country. It's not enough to make you tear up, but the fact that Tillman died in a friendly fire while in the military should be. Number two on this list is Jackie Robinson breaks the baseball color barrier. Some things are better left unexplained. This is one of the most important moments in U.S. history, and also one that makes you so happy that you're forced to shed a tear. And then number one on this list of sporting things that you cry at are the Munich Olympic massacre. The 1972 Munich Olympics were unfortunately headlined by one thing: the Munich massacre. For those of you who don't know, the Munich Massacre was when members of the Israeli Olympic team were taken hostage and eventually murdered by the terrorist group Black September. 11 Israeli athletes and coaches were killed in this sick event, and I think everybody was crying during that one. So, yeah, sad, sad, sad event. Here's Mitch on WGN. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
So, I got a couple real little short ones in front. By the way, the only time I think I remember crying, even as a Cub fan my whole life, 1989, Greg LeMond, after being accidentally shot by his brother-in-law, came back, still had lead pellets from a turkey hunting accident from years earlier. No one said he could win, and on the very last day of the Tour de France, came back and beat Laurent Fignon by 7 seconds, and it never happened before.
Wow.
And it was the most amazing ending to a Tour de France in history. If you ever want to Google it, 1989 Tour de France, it's unbelievable.
Wow, that's amazing.
Standing up and down. Yeah, I was screaming at my TV back when they used to cover it live.
Wow, that's great.
And then I got what I think is the greatest Bill Buckner joke in the world.
Uh-huh.
What do Bill Buckner and Michael Jackson have in common?
What do Bill Buckner and Michael Jackson have in common? What's that?
They both wear one glove for no apparent reason.
All right.
That's great, man.
All right, now here's the story, and it's a little crueler because I don't really follow hockey that much. I watch near the end if the Hawks are doing great. I start tuning in. I've just never been a hockey guy, but yeah. I follow Chicago sports when they're playing great. And but I had a buddy who's notorious for pouting like a baby when his teams don't do what they want to do. And I have a great big TV. He has a small TV. And whatever year that was, when the Hawks won with, what, was it 17 seconds to go?
Yes. Well, it was there were two goals that were scored in 17 seconds, back-to-back.
Okay.
And they did, and that was 2013.
All right, I'll try to keep, okay, 13, that should be able to, I should be able to remember that.
Yeah.
So, the deal is, he's at my house watching the game, and as it's getting nearer and nearer the end, he's pouting and getting louder and louder and louder. And finally, he gets up, throws something down, and says, I'm out of here. I've had this.
Oh, you know, no.
Storms out of the house.
Oh, no.
And drives about 17 miles from my home to his home. And I knew darn well he wouldn't tune it in, and I start seeing what's happening. And I reach over, grab my phone to call him, and I thought, no. And I waited, and then I watched a little bit of the celebration, and I tried to time in my mind, when will he be getting home? And I reached over, dialed the phone, and I said, hey, how's it going? He goes, good. Nice timing. I just pulled in my driveway. I go, perfect. You've got time to run in and turn it on. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, go in and turn on your TV, you little baby. And I hung up, and I just didn't say anything else.
Did he call you back, Mitch?
He actually did call me back, and he said, I probably should be mad at you, but I guess I got it coming. And I said, you absolutely do.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah.
That is a great story.
And here's the deal. He actually stopped doing that, and he basically grew up as a Sox fan, but he fell in love with the Cubs the last 3 or 4 years. And he'll call me now and then, and he absolutely stopped doing that. Because if you'll remember, I think it was 2 years ago, how many Cub games where they came back from looking like it was over.
Yeah.
And they started winning games in the eighth or ninth inning.
Yeah.
And the Cubs broke him of that habit of being a baby and tuning out.
That's
great. He watched until the very end.
That is so hilarious. So, anyhow. That's a great one. Great story. Mitch, thanks for the call.
Be sure to tell your dad the Bill Buckner joke.
I will. I bet he knows that one. He probably knows that one. All right, Mitch, thank you, buddy. Okay.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. They both have one glove for no apparent reason. I think I heard that one years ago, and I had forgotten it. All right. Let's take a break here. We got the weather coming up, and then we'll come back with more on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200. Trucker Rich. Requested that Tim McGraw Live Like You Were Dying. So welcome back, everybody. A little news story here about MasterCard. The red circle, yellow circle, MasterCard is going to drop its name from the logo. What's in a name for MasterCard? Not enough to keep it in the logo. The company is removing the word MasterCard from the pair of interlocking red and yellow circles where it has resided for more than 50 years. MasterCard joins a small stable of brands like Nike, Apple, and Target that rely on an image and not a name in most marketing materials. A picture communicates better than words, said Alan Adamson, co-founder of the marketing strategy firm Metaforce. Yeah, man, Metaforce! And they have the distinct advantage of having one of the most recognizable icons in the world. The purchase, New York company said Monday that 80% of people recognize the MasterCard logo even when its name isn't present. It also points to the changing nature of exchanging currency. One of the original major credit card companies, formerly known as MasterCard, has attempted to rebrand itself in recent years as a technology company in the global payments industry, quote-unquote. Adamson said the new wordless logo is a reflection of the tech-centric world that we live in. Evolving the logo into an app-like icon also fits in line with how younger consumers are consuming the world around them, Adamson said. MasterCard's announced changes, with many corporate rebranding campaigns, also has its skeptics. I do not think it is yet iconic enough to successfully execute this new identity, but over time, they'll learn if it was a mistake, Pace University marketing professor Larry Chiagoras said. He added, which I think it is. Ooh, Larry doesn't like the move. I would recognize it. I have a MasterCard, I believe, in my pocket. Yeah. Let's see. Mine obviously still has the... that's totally recognizable, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. It's the red and the orange, the orange and the... See, I don't even know what colors are now, Dan. I can't identify colors at this point.
What radio station are you working
on? I don't know. I think that that's... If you removed... I'm looking at the logo right now on my credit card. I'm looking at the logo right now, and if you removed the word MasterCard, it would still be recognizable. So I don't agree with Larry Lewis or whatever the hell his name is. So now that gets us to talking about some of the most iconic brand logos of all time. What are the most iconic for you? Which ones pop in here? So Complex.com put together a list of the 50 most iconic brand logos of all time. Now, when you think of a great logo, Dan... I mean, these don't... Now, a lot of these actually have the name of the company in it. Not necessarily. They're not just images, you know. They're like logos with letters and fonts and stuff like that. But what are some of the classic ones that you think of?
The first one would probably be the Coca-Cola, you know, the cursive, the red and the white. Obviously it changes a little bit if it's Diet Coke and things like that, but
right.
I mean, you could almost just put any white lettering on a red circle and I would think Coca-Cola. I mean, it's just that iconic. And then I saw with the Diet Coke, you know, it's just a strip now on the can.
Yeah.
I passed by a truck dropping off Diet Coke to a 7-Eleven or whatever on the way home yesterday. And, you know, same type of thing. If I just saw, I didn't see what the brand, there was no brand on there. I just saw a silver can with a red stripe. I'd know it'd be Diet Coke.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's a good one. The first one that popped into my head, was indeed one that doesn't have words. And that's Apple. Apple was the first one that popped into my head. I think it's a great logo. I really do. And you know, as soon as you see it now, I mean, it's so completely iconic right now. And anytime anytime someone is taking a picture, you can see it because it's on the back of the phone, you know. But yeah, so that was the first one that I think is a pretty classic one. And also, it also gets a really big laugh in Forrest Gump when you find out that all the money that Forrest was making from shrimping was invested for him in Apple. And of course, this was, you know, before Apple really took off. And remember, there's the moment in Forrest Gump when he goes to the mailbox and he opens up the mailbox and he's got, you know, a letter from them, and all you see is in the top left corner, you know, the return address part. You see the Apple logo, and immediately, every time I've seen that movie, like with a group of people in a theater, and even just this past summer when I screened it as part of my my film club, my Zemeckis Fest, that moment where you see the logo, you just bust out laughing because you know, okay, well, Forrest Gump's rich now.
because look at that logo. He's got money. So,
you know, try looking at a yellow M without thinking ever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other day, Jeannie and I were at Tony's downtown on Washington, and I had Tony's Benedict, what they call it, and it, you know, Eggs Benedict, and it came on a buttermilk biscuit. And I told Jeannie, you know, normally these come on a McMuffin, don't they?
On a McMuffin.
She said, oh, McDonald's would be so proud.
Yeah, on a McMuffin.
A McMuffin. Yeah. That's what came out of my face.
Well, you know what? I mean, the McDonald's arches are just,
Yeah, and they've even got me saying McMuffins now.
Yeah, McMuffins. That's how ingrained it is.
Right.
Instead of an English muffin, you said a McMuffin. Okay,
right.
That's pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean, that's what, I mean, you know, McDonald's is what, I mean, one of the most iconic and legendary logos of all time. So, so I got this here. This is from complex.com. Number 50 on the list is Goodyear. And, the company was founded in 1898. The year the logo was introduced was 1901. So that logo, the Goodyear logo, has been around 1901. In 1900, the wing foot symbol for the Goodyear company was chosen after the founder, Frank Seiberling, was inspired by a statue of the Greek god Hermes. The idea of speed had a lot to do with Goodyear's selection of the symbol, as well as the embodiment of many of the characteristics that Goodyear will be known for. The logo remains the same throughout the years, with the occasional color or font change. And what we were just talking about, the news story that we were just talking about next here on the list, in number 49, is MasterCard. The company was founded in 1966. The year the logo was introduced was also 1966. The logo designer was Future Brand. And born in 1966 as MasterCharge, the first MasterCard logo featured a logo type of "We Honor MasterCharge," the Interbank card, layered over two overlapping circles, one bright orange and the other burnt orange. In 1979, MasterCharge, the Interbank card, was renamed MasterCard, and the change was accompanied by a new logo for the company that featured brighter colors and a bolder logo type. In 1996, the logo was redesigned into the now iconic logo, which features a 3D logo type. The overlaying circles are depicted through stripes of color rather than the third orange color. Yeah. So, and that's remained the same since then. All right. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland and Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Yeah, I would like to talk about what I believe is an underappreciated logo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everyone is familiar with the Warner Brothers WB shield. It's iconic. You can't take anything away from it. But
right.
Do you remember the Warner Brothers 7 Arts logo that was used in the late 60s and early 70s?
Yes.
I always liked that.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great logo. You know, and I'm actually a fan of the studio logos. I think they're kind of fun.
I always like the way that the W7 logo was animated on some of the movies, like Bullet is an example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
Good to talk again, Nick. Have a good show.
Take care. See you later.
Bye.
Bye. There are so many of these. I don't think we're going to finish this topic this morning. But if I want to hear what you guys think. No, I can't even talk now. The most iconic logos of all time. The most iconic brand logos of all time. Which ones popped into your head right away? Which ones immediately you know the brand, or you know the company, or you know the product? 312-981-7200. All right, we'll talk more about this right after the news, which is coming up after this. Wildcard Wednesday continues. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Kathy requesting the Cow Sills, the rain, the park, and other things. Dan, do you know who the Cow Sills are?
Kind of. I know of them, thanks to this show.
They are the inspiration for the Partridge Family. They were a family, an actual family that played music together and had some hits. And they were, I think, the original inspiration for the TV show, The Partridge Family. So we have the Cow Sills to thank for the Partridge Family.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. We are talking about some of the most iconic brand logos of all time. What are the ones that pop into your head? Brand logos that that you think are very successful and that are iconic and that you don't forget, and the minute you see them, you know what it is. 312-981-7200. How about this one? The next one here is Michelin. Michelin, the company was founded in 1888. The logo was introduced in 1888. And the company founders were Eduardo and Andre Michelin. The logo for the Michelin company has always been the Michelin Tire Man, whose shape, level of intensity, and size originated from the company's early days. The Tire Man was inspired by a pile of tires that Eduardo Michelin imagined to be a man when they were attending the Lion Universal Exhibition. In 1989, the Michelin Man was created by O'Gallop. What was Eduardo on when he saw a pile of tires and pictured him as a man? What have you been drinking, Eduardo? What's going on there? I can't believe that the actual Michelin Man has been around since 1888. Doesn't that seem...
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like a much later create. Would be a much later creation. And, I don't know. I just think that's weird. Well, good Eduardo, man. Eduardo Michelin running around going, hey, look at that pile of tires there. So, all right. How about Mobil Oil? You know, I grew up living next to a Mobil gas station. Gas station slash car wash, which is now condos, of course. But I grew up right next to the Mobil gas station. Saw that logo every day. Founded in 1911, the logo was introduced in 1911. Company founder was Vacuum Oil. Mobil Oil Company began in 1911, has its roots in several oil companies that preceded it, such as Aladdin Standard Oil Company and Gargoyle, a Mobil product line of lubricants for industrial refrigeration systems. In 1911, the Pegasus was introduced, with the founding member of the company, and it has been modified slightly over time until 1964, when Mobil simplified the logo to include the company name with the signature red O. And it's still that way. Next year, Volvo, which the company was founded in 1927. The logo was also introduced in 1927. When Volvo was reactivated by financial backer Svenska Kulafabriken in 1927, the company adopted the ancient chemical symbol for iron, a circle with an arrow pointed diagonally upwards to the right. The logo type was updated in 1959 by Carl Eric Forsberg, and that's the same logo that's used today. Oh, yeah. All right, 847 area code. Says, iconic for me is the bulldog on the hood of a Mack truck. Well, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good one.
847 area code says the cursive D in the Walt Disney's signature that played at the beginning of every Disney movie. Yeah, and that's actually Walt Disney's signature. Like that the logo is Walt Disney's real signature. They just took Walt Disney's real signature and used that. But for the movies now that Disney does, it's the Magic Kingdom castle, a star that goes around it, like a rainbow that goes around it. And doesn't Tinkerbell come in and hit at the beginning of Disney movies, right? Doesn't Tinkerbell come in and hit the top of the thing?
Right. And depending on where the film is set, the locale leading up to the Magic Kingdom matches the locale of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie studio logos are there. Some of them are really iconic. Like 20th Century Fox with the big block the big block lettered statue of the 20th Century Fox logo, and then the spotlights going around it, and the theme, of course. So many classic. What about MGM with the lion, the MGM lion? That's a classic. Columbia Pictures with the woman holding the torch, who. By the way, you know, and it was right around the early 90s when we started referring to. I remember this was in the screening room. In the screening room, we would joke about this. Roger was one of the first guys to joke. Roger Ebert was one of the first guys to joke about it. Whenever there was a movie from Columbia Pictures, because they kind of updated the logo a little bit, and which they do with a lot of the logos, and now the logos move, you know, like they're sort of interactive, kind of, they kind of 3D-ish, they move in, and, you know, they used to be kind of stationary, you know? But now they pull the camera back to reveal you from, it starts in the torch. When the Columbia Pictures thing comes, it zooms in on the torch, and then it slowly pulls out to reveal the woman holding the statue standing on the podium. We started to joke in the early 90s in the screening room that it was Annette Bening. So that's what we said, and it still looks like Annette Bening. So if the next time you see a movie from Columbia, that's Annette Bening. We think that's what we used to joke about all the time. Every time there was a movie from Columbia Pictures, at the beginning of the movie when the logo would appear, somebody in the screening room would go Annette Bening, and it became like a running gag in the screening room. You know, you see a lot of movies with a bunch of people in a room. You got to start cracking jokes at some point. So she's Annette Bening. Last night when I screened Slapshot, that's a Universal movie. Classic logo. It's always been the Earth. It's changed over the years because now, you know, it moves. The Universal logo like moves across the Earth as the camera moves around it, animated around it, and then pulls back to reveal. And once the name Universal is centered, it stops. And it used to be back in the old days with, you know, all the monster movies, the Frankensteins and the Draculas and all those movies. It would be like a globe, like a silver globe, that would be spinning around, and a plane would fly around it, like a biplane would fly around it, and the Universal, it would say a Universal picture, and the plane would fly around it. But the globe has always been the Universal logo. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. TriStar, that's a Pegasus, I think, if I remember correctly. It's a Pegasus that pops out. That's a similar logo to Columbia, but it's instead of Annette Bening, it's a Pegasus. What are some of the other? We did Columbia already. You know, Columbia changed, though. You know, they used to be they in the 70s, the Columbia logo was weird. It was kind of like a half moon with a star in the middle of it, and there was no Annette Bening at all. And that's when they brought Annette Bening back. But in the 70s, the Columbia Pictures logo was strange in the 70s. And the old Warner Brothers logo from the 70s... They used the old Warner Brothers logo from the 70s in what was the name of that movie, the Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe, and it was really cool to see like that retro. It's sometimes they'll do that if a movie takes place in a certain time period. Sometimes they'll pull out the retro logo, the retro studio logo, and I always find that great. And I tell you, it's really funny because Mike and I were talking. Mike Kurz, you know, who he and his wife Mia run Flashback Convention, and Mike helps me with the film club. And I was talking with him last night, and we were talking about how when we show these older movies, you know, like last night we showed Slapshot. That movie's almost 42 years old. And we were happy because sometimes when you show these old films, they replace the old logo with the current one because, you know, it's all digitally. They change it all digitally and stuff when they remaster the movie, or they do a restoration on it. They change the old logo to the latest logo.
But they didn't do that. Last night when during Slapshot, it was the old school logo. It was the logo from the 70s. So, very cool. But yeah, the movie logos, I can go on and on about those. And now there's 57 different, you know, there's so many studios and so many production companies. And all of the studios and all of the production companies have their own specific logo. Have you noticed, Dan, you know, that over the past maybe 15 years, it takes 15 minutes before the credits start?
Yeah.
Because there's 95 production companies and you have to see every one of their, you know, every one of their little slick logos. You know, like if maybe two studios release it and then there's four production companies and every one of the production companies has their logo and you sit through all of them before the opening credits. You're just sitting there going, okay, all right, all right. Some of the logos are pretty cool, though. Some of them are pretty cool. All right, let's take a break. We got a bunch of texts that that have come in. We'll talk about that. We're talking about some of the most iconic brand logos of all time because MasterCard is going to get rid of the word MasterCard and just have those two circles as their logo. And I think that's going to work. So, all right, let's break here. I got some weather for you. A lot of peppy, happy songs this morning on the Wild Card Wednesday. And this wraps up our Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah! And we'll do it again next week. Glenn with Roy Rogers and Happy Trails. Yes, Happy Trails. Hey, welcome, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we've been talking about some of the most iconic brand logos, which were the most memorable. What ones pop into your head? 312-981-7200. And we were just talking about movie studio logos and how there are so many of them because every production company and every studio right now has a logo that has to take 10 minutes to proceed before the movie begins. So, hey, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Let's see. Here's Kurt on WGN. Hi, Kurt.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I was thinking about, I don't know if you call it a movie icon, but I can remember the days when the old Alfred Hitchcock's would come on, and he would do his good evening,
yeah,
and have the side character's profile, and
yeah,
that's pretty iconic, I think.
Absolutely iconic is the profile of Alfred Hitchcock, the outline of the profile, and then he would always stand in it, you know, when the show started, yeah.
Exactly. I think the modern day one, I think a lot of children would recognize would be when I actually enjoy is the Pixar, where it's got the hopping little desk lamp.
Yeah, that character, the hopping desk lamp, was the character in the very first Pixar short that they did. That was the that was the main character of the very first Pixar short, so that's been their logo, the hopping desk lamp. So, yeah, that's iconic,
cool.
too. All right, Kurt, thank you.
Right, thank you.
And now, speaking of animation studios, they all have their own logos now, too. You know, Illumination. Illumination is they're responsible for Despicable Me and The Secret Life of Pets and some of the other ones. And they bring in Minions are now their logo. So at the beginning of each Illumination movie, it lights up, it illuminates. It lights up the words in all like bold letters in caps, all bold cap letters. It lights up and there's a Minion. Illumination, he says. And my mom laughs every time. Whenever we see an Illumination production, she laughs there because she loves those Minions. My mom loves those Minions. All right, let's see. We've got some more texts here. 847 area code says the Chevy logo. Yeah. A lot of the car logos, we mentioned Volvo already, a lot of the car logos you can recognize immediately. 815 area code, any major sports team logo could fit into the category. Yeah, what are some of the coolest team logos? Cubs, obviously, classic, simple. And you know what's great about it? The C could stand for Chicago or it could stand for Cub. You don't know. I don't know. Yeah, the sports team logos. My favorite sports logo is the Blackhawks. That's my favorite. Let's see. Oh, how about this? 847 area code, the Superman logo is iconic worldwide. Yeah, it's true. Didn't they explain that the S is not for Superman?
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah. 630 area code, Shell Gas. 708 area code says, I think it's supposed to be a globe at the end of the credits for every movie from Sony. At the end? At the very end? Like the final credits? Oh. 708 area code says Nike, the Nike swoosh, it even has a name. That's true. The Nike swoosh, which according to this article is the number one most iconic most iconic brand logo. And I would probably agree with that, right? I mean, you know, it's McDonald's is right up there, Coke is right up there, but the Nike logo is just it's pretty unbelievable. And it's everywhere. It's on their products, it's in the, you know, it's everywhere. All right, how about Target? Founded in 1902. The company was founded in 1902? Target was? The year the logo was introduced was in 1962. The company founder was George Dayton. The logo for Target has always been a red Target, but when the store was just a small retail store in Minneapolis, the design was a bit more pronounced. Now the iconic red Target logo is recognized almost everywhere, but in the early days of the brand, it had a bolded black Target across the entirety of the circle to create a distinctive image in customers' minds. The next logo, introduced in 1980, consisted of a single ring and inner core, still in red, and the design on stores today is basically that same thing, with the retail chain's name either under it or next to it. And now they're just doing, you know, like on commercials, they just do the Target now. They very rarely, you know, commercials and stuff, very rarely you see the name Target. It's just that, the symbol. Oh, Fisher-Price. That's a pretty iconic logo. I'm looking at it right now. That's a pretty good one. The year the company was founded was 1930. The logo was introduced in 31. Fisher-Price was founded in 1930 following a successful reception of their products at the American International Toy Fair in 1931. The first logo, which had text within an orange box with the company's location, was used in 1955 and 1956. The FP was added. Fisher-Price Toys was shortened to Fisher-Price, and the FP lasted until 1984 when the full name was brought back inside of a red banner. Wrap it up with some texts here. The Union Pacific Railroad logo has been around in one form or another for over 100 years. 815 Erico says the Beretta Company and their logo have been around since 1526. Here are some great ones. 847 Erico says Domino's Pizza. Yeah, that's a good one. Taco Bell and Kellogg's K. 269 Erico, famous logos growing up included Sinclair's Green Dinosaur. That was my favorite because if you would go past a Sinclair's gas station, there was a giant dinosaur out there. There was a dinosaur, and so I would always want my dad to get gas at a Sinclair because I would see the dinosaur. Mobile's Red Wing Horse, we talked about that one already. Modern one is LG. Oh, and that's another one. These the phones and all that stuff. Like Verizon's got the check. It's got the name with the red check at the end of it. AT&T, classic logo. Iconic to me is Big Boy's Burgers. 815 area code. Paramount Studios is iconic, and why do they use 22 stars? Because in 1916, film producer Adolf Zucker put 22 stars and actresses under contract and honored them all with a star on the logo. And that is a classic logo, the Paramount logo with the mountain. Dan, you remember how Raiders of the Lost Ark opens?
I do not.
It opens with the Paramount logo. You see the regular Paramount logo, and this was the Paramount logo that they used years ago because in 1981. And then the Paramount logo dissolves, and Spielberg found a mountain that looked exactly like it, and it dissolves into that mountain, like the real mountain where they're standing. It's really one of the coolest things. It's really cool. I remember like the first time I saw Raiders, I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Spielberg found a mountain that looks exactly like the mountain in the Paramount logo, and then put the Paramount logo over it and dissolved that. That was pretty cool. 630 area code says a lady from Blue Island was the model for the lady with the torch with Columbia Pictures back for several decades. No, it's Annette Bening. And then finally, Glenn says the symbol for theater with the sad face and the happy face. Yep. All right. We got tons more of this stuff. I'm going to save this. We can do it some other time because we're out of time. And we'll be back tomorrow with Triple Play Thursday and much more planned for tomorrow. But right now, the news is coming up next.